It's time for Mac Break Weekly. Alex Lindsay joins the crew, Chris Breen too, as we talk about iBeacon. Will it be the next big thing or another Apple stumble? You stay tuned. We'll talk about it next on Mac Break Weekly.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 380, recorded December 10th, 2013. The knife hurts twice. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free 2-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code MACBREAK12. And by Personal Capital. With Personal Capital, you'll finally have all your financial life in one place and get a clear view of everything you own. Best of all, it's free. To sign up, go to personalcapital.com/MACBREAK. And by Shutterstock.com. With over 30 million high-quality stock photos, illustrations, vectors, and video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 25% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code MACBREAK1213. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers your Apple news in obsessive detail. And the chief obsessors are here, starting with Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. Hello, Renee.
Hi, Leo. I feel so far away all of a sudden being back across the continent.
Snow is pouring down on you in beautiful Montreal.
It is. It's not as bad as Western Canada, but it's doing its best to keep me off the roads.
It's a cold, been a cold winter. We got cut down to 40 degrees here.
I blame Al Gore for all of this. He wrote it, and now it's happening.
You saw Jimmy Kimmel did a fun piece where he had all the LA newscasters bitching and moaning about how cold it was. The wind's blowing.
When I was in Petaluma in San Francisco, everyone's complaining about the weather, and for me, it was a bright summer day.
I know.
Fantastic.
I know. It's all, I guess, your perspective. That's Andy Yanatko, our other obsessor, with a cube. Where'd you get that?
I was having a conversation with somebody about old computers. I happen to have this in the other room. And so I said, "Oh, you want to see a cube? Here it is."
Because awesome.
It was the only way to, like, because he did not know, like, how the coolest feature of the cube, which is the HAL 9000 style. Here's how to remove the core.
Right.
Which
I love
is
how that.
Still, which is still like you feel like if you spend more than $1,200 for something, there should be a thick mechanical like dual pump handle that is recessed. You have to punch down that ejects with a satisfying click that lets you pull out like a cork from a bottle, a cube of just packed green circuit board and silver traces and ICs, and then you say, "Okay, this is what I spent $1,200 for."
Do you want to do that later in the show?
Sure.
It might, if it's a slow show, maybe we'll have Andy take apart his cube. I wrote my first book on a cube. I love those cubes. Yeah. My second book on a cube.
It was probably my first unnecessary Mac purchase. Because they discontinued those pretty quickly, and I had one on loan, and Apple said, "Yeah, if you'd rather just not send it back, if you and
said, oh,
really you don't want this
days,
back,
my
awesome,
friends,
here's my credit card number."
And also with us, Mr. Chris Breen, the hair Breen, body Breen, the whole Breen, old damn Breen,
all of the Breen right here, and it's freezing here. I think it's 70.
So actually, cold. We've actually had pretty cold weather for the Bay Area. I mean, it's been down to 18, 19 degrees at night, which is that's cold for us. That's really cold for us. That's unusually cold for us.
Well, yeah, because we insulate our homes with
cheese,
air, with nothing.
Record albums.
Everybody, you know, because we have these cabanas and we have these great decks and the windows are open all the time and we've forgotten how to close them. And so when it gets down to 18, it gets chilly.
Chris is the Mac Daddy, the guy in charge of Mac 911. Or is it 411? There's a one in there somewhere.
Yeah, there are a couple of ones in there.
And then at macworld.com. It's always good to have you on. Thanks for joining us, Chris. We're seeing more of your studio than we usually do. We see the whole kit and the caboodle as well.
Yeah, I got a widescreen camera now, so it's can see just like how horrendously junked up my office is.
Well, it looks like you're working.
Yes, I am.
And I'm trying to look at, you know, every time Chris is on, he puts an album up for us. I want to say Steely Dan, but because the light blue, but I know that that's the thing in the middle. I don't know what that is. Is that?
Let's see if anybody on Twitter gets it.
I'm thinking singer-songwriter Loudon Wainwright III.
That's really close, but no, it's actually singer-songwriter John Martin, who never really made it in this country. People tried really, really hard. Wonderful kind of folky singer-songwriter kind of guy who had this mumble down to an amazing degree where he just sort of... you have no idea what he's saying. But it was, but it was very sexy and very British. And so John Martin gets the pick today.
So and let me show you the Gaucho cover because that's really... It is remarkably like the Steely Dan Gaucho cover. And from a distance, you could excuse me for...
I do.
For especially since it's somebody who never made it in the States.
they tried. I mean, even Phil Collins put the force of his career behind John Martin.
Really?
Wow. Yeah.
That's hard to believe. Wow.
No.
Wow.
And America
yeah,
still
I think
said.
If the cover had just had a bigger close up, he would have made it.
No. I never heard of the guy. No. Never. Also here, look at this. In studio, left the best for last. He's pairing USB keys.
I have keys.
128 gig USB drives. Mr. Alex Lindsay, good to see you. Thanks for stalling for me. I was running late.
It's good.
What a surprise, as usual.
It's kind of fun. I like doing the
pre-show is great with you.
I
because there's somebody here, at least, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I do apologize. I was busy trying to find something to say. There's no news.
He's looking around.
12 days. You have the, Renee Ritchie has the headline, 12 days of Apple.
12 days of gifts. It's not Christmas this year, and it's finally available in the U.S., so two big changes.
It wasn't available it was only Canada last time?
It was the U.K., and then it went to Canada, I think, the next year, and this is the first year I believe it's available in the U.S., and it's also 12 days of gifts now, not 12 days of Christmas. And it's fairly encompassing. I mean, there are going to be iBooks, there's going to be rentals, there's going to be episodes of TV shows. And it'll notify you when the new one is available for download.
Now, I got to laugh because Microsoft is also doing its 12 days promotion. It's called 12 Days of Deals.
Nice.
It's kind of confusing. You got 12 days. I guess that's, you know, like 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah.
Gifts, deals, whatever. Microsoft's getting down there. I mean, some of these deals are really, really cheap. They start December 9th. I don't know why I'm telling the Mac Break crowd about the Microsoft. Look at the deal on the Dell Tablet Pro.
Because we're all going to run out and get one.
I was in town, Leo, for the first time. I went over to the I've never seen a Microsoft store in person before. So I went to Santana Row to the big mall across the street, and there was an Apple store. And immediately opposite, of course, was the Microsoft store.
Yeah.
And the Apple store was, I could barely get into it, but I had a lot of availability in the Microsoft store.
Yeah. And they really kind of look the same.
Yes, well,
It's funny the way that there's in Boston there's there's the landmark Boylston Street Apple Store, and then there's the Microsoft Store across the street in the Prudential, and the Prudential one is sort of like Bizarro World Apple Store, where it's like everything, every decision that Apple in the broader sense, every decision that Apple made, when Microsoft had to do the opposite. So whereas the Apple Store is like a long, long bowling alley sort of thing in a mall store, the mall version of the Microsoft Store is all horizontal. And when you, people wear shoes on their hands and they say goodbye when they enter the room.
There's a significant difference between what Microsoft's doing and Apple's doing. Microsoft starting theirs, actually already started theirs. Apple's waiting till after Christmas.
Yeah, because it's not Christmas, Leo, it's gifts.
Gifts.
Yeah. Also, to be fair, Microsoft has lots and lots of stock on almost all of this sort of stuff.
Plenty of stuff to give away.
Yeah, I mean, whereas Apple, it's more like we will email you a gift card if you decide to buy a device on this day, but otherwise, we'd much rather you not just deplete our stock during the Christmas buying season.
So, as you said, this happened in Europe, Canada, Japan. You have experienced this firsthand, Renee Ritchie. What is it like, Renee?
It was incredibly odd last year because, unlike the UK, Apple tied it to newspapers. So, for example, my local newspaper, the Montreal Gazette, would print out something and then you'd have to go and get the paper or look it up online and then go to the Apple store and get it. So it was a media partnership play. It was nowhere nearly as easy as it was in the UK, where it was just, you know, tap here and get this. But this year it looks like it's really that easy. They'll send you a notification at midnight local time, wherever you are, and then you'll be able to go and download whatever the iBook is or the app is or the music is or the rental is. And they have a FAQ when you first download the app and install it. There's a little info button, and you can press that, and it gives you this long list of questions. Like, what if you're traveling? What if you, you know, if you download it to your Apple TV, but you later want to watch it on your iPhone? So it's a bit of a rigmarole, but it's there's a lot of free stuff there.
So the key is to download the app right now, right?
Yeah, and it's way early. Like right now, I believe it says 17 or 16 days. Like it just gives you a big countdown on how long you have to wait. I think right now it's at 16
it's a digital
days.
Digital advent calendar, but there's no chocolate.
Yeah, 16 where's the chocolate? Days until our first gift.
My mother got us an advent calendar.
Yeah.
My kids, of course, opened all the doors.
All
the
doors.
Day.
Too young.
It was an Indabili hut. It was
oh, that's neat.
It was really cool, actually. You build it up, and wow. It's like this little square, you know.
Ours just has chocolate. Abby's 21. Well, she's been going in order. 1, 2, 3, 4, right. 5, 6. Michael's 11. Right across the top. At least it's one per day, but right across the top. Too hard to find them because, you know, these advent calendars, they don't put them in order. They're all over the place.
They got to have you skipping around, and yeah. No, it took me a little while because I just thought my mom had sent me.
That's neat. A hut. So you build a hut.
I thought that she had sent an Indabili hut, which I thought was great because I didn't really realize what it was until all the windows were open.
Oh, wait a minute. There's music.
Oh, Christmas music.
Slots bar. Wait a minute. Is this the Apple one?
Is that the right app, Leo?
Did I get the wrong app?
That might not be the right app.
I don't think Apple would have an Christmas ad for slots. Gambling in there.
It's Christmas slots.
Well, that's funny. It says 12 days of Christmas free. Oh, it's from Quick Apps. Here it is.
12 days
Let's get the other one. Boy, I don't know. I might go back to the slots. That looked interesting.
You lose. It's coal for you. Yeah. Three lumps of coal.
Man.
Yeah, coal. Coal. Coal.
All day Christmas Day. Free buffet at the quarter slots.
And who says
remember,
no
smoking is always allowed.
We had our Christmas party at the new casino up the road a bit, the Grayton Casino, misnamed because it's not in Grayton. But, Chad, did anybody come ahead a winner? Because we left.
Yeah, I actually think Josh did. I came behind a loser, but Josh
gave
him
each a $100 bill.
Uh-huh.
Oh, nice.
And the ones who came away a winner were the ones who took the bill and left.
And left. Right. Right.
Yeah, nice.
Enjoyed that.
That was
hologram.
You, Berg. You're the winner. Yeah. No, but somebody told me that Glenn got, like, his first pull at the slots. He won $116.
What?
Yeah.
Extra? Or
and then he played it away.
On his extra, 100.
Extra.
Jeez. Wow.
Okay, here we go. Here's the Apple 12 days of gifts. No music, no slots. I have to choose the store. This is all the places it is?
Yep.
Wow, it's all over the world. I mean, Suriname, Trinidad and Tobago, Oman, Niger, Netherlands, Nepal, and that's just the ends. Holy magoli. I got to get back to me. It's quite a bit. So it pretty much looks like everywhere there's an Apple store, yeah?
Yeah. And the content will, of course, vary by region because not all the same stuff is available in the same
place. Yeah, obviously. Well, I can't find myself now.
You're at the bottom, United States.
Yeah, this is much
I went all the way up to Albania. All right.
God forbid they just put it on a frickin' web page. First you download the app, and then you register the app, and then you tell it which of these 100 countries you're a part of.
Hit the done in the
oh,
corner.
Oh, frickin' ho.
Done at top right.
Okay, I know. Okay, but I just want to say, isn't that what you would normally do? United States, done.
It's actually worse because it should just read the Apple Store that you're logged in on the machine and not have to bother you with this.
Oh, up here there's a done.
Yeah.
I hate. Have I tested? I hate iOS 7 lately. 12 days would like to send me push notifications. Of course you would. Why not? I'm going to turn my screen down. This is one thing I like about iOS 7. I can do that easily. And now what?
That's now you it? Wait 16 days.
You wait 16 days.
No music? No slots? Nothing? No
nothing.
Could they have given me a game to play?
Exactly.
Thank you for your personal information, Leo. Here's a static page for you.
And you got to think
waiting game.
That it's going to, I mean, why make it an app? Why? Think about it. Why make it an app?
And why do it 2 weeks early?
So it could follow me around day after day. I'm traveling outside the country. Does that affect the countdown? This is the FAQ. How do
no,
I download
time
my gift?
Stops when you leave America.
Where can I find my gift? So what? So you're gonna?
Is it worth my while going to Ghana to buy it?
So what? Okay. So Renee, do we know what these gifts are going to be, or what?
If you read the FAQ, you can get a hint. Like it does say there'll be movie rentals, there'll be TV show episodes, there'll be iBooks. And it says, for example, you have to have iBooks downloaded to get the iBook. You have to have an Apple account, you know, to get the if you want to get more episodes of the free episode they give you. So it's just going to be a variety of stuff from the iTunes store.
A free movie rental is cool. Unless it's 21 Jump Street, then I don't care.
It's going to be a Christmas story.
Do we get to pick it, you think, or will it be like any movie?
Your Wonderful Life.
Star Wars.
Yeah, I'm guessing
Christmas.
They'll
be watching Star Wars Life Christmas. Again.
I would, you know what? If they do Star Wars Christmas, two thumbs up. Copyright Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel, 1982.
Christmas shoes.
Yeah.
Exceptional.
We don't know. But what was it in Canada last year? Was it like, what did you
get? It was for like a couple Christmas songs and I forget what they were, but books. Yeah,
it's a specific thing.
Yeah.
Personal data collected. Yeah. All right.
Oh, it's not a very Apple-y app, though. I mean, like, it doesn't already pull terrible. Your information from the thing. It doesn't look like iOS 7 in any way, shape, or form. The icon is completely... If you go to the home screen, the icon does not look like an iOS 7 icon.
Let's see. It's hard to choose between that and 12 Days Free, which should I... That's got a lovely lady on it singing. This is how Apple should...
Skeuomorphic, Leo. It's far too skeuomorphic.
It's
and there's
singing.
Slots.
We have a quiz...
There was slots before.
Oh, there's different ads all the time. This is American Express.
And it gives
now.
You more.
I know what the point of the Apple app is. It's to instead of keeping you in control of the gift getting experience, it sort of wants to keep you like in a state of mild panic until Christmas Day. You never know when that phone's going to go off in your pocket, when you have to drop your kid, pick up your phone, claim your copy of Grandma Got Run Over by a Reindeer. Not the song, but the lame cartoon show.
Look, though, I can share it with my friends. Let's see. Let me just tweet.
Limited quantity.
Download the free 12 Days of Gift app to get a gift from iTunes every day for January 20th, December 20th, 12 days. And that's it. And I can post
always
it.
Always drink your Ovaltine.
And they did it quite right because there's four characters left in case I want to put in a personal message. Why does this keep turning up the brightness?
Help.
It's doing it for your own good.
Seriously. Didn't I turn down the brightness? Am I wrong?
Yeah
it's still, unless you turn off the automatic, it's still going to try and match the ambient light sensor.
Okay. In other words, I don't know what I'm doing.
Surrender to the machine, Leo. Surrender to the machine.
I'm sorry. I'm cranky. I apologize. I love this app. Thank you, Apple. It's 12 things free. I don't have to pay tax on them, do I?
Hard to know.
Income tax?
Hard to know.
Wow. Is there a place on your form to fill in free iTunes gifts on your tax?
Somebody pointed out in the chat room, the 12 days icon at least should count down. Pete Delahanty Patrick said that. It doesn't. It just says 12.
Yeah.
Of course, it'd be confusing if it said 16 and it's the 12 days app.
Well, of course, you know, what they need, though, is they need to have that connected to gifts that use iBeacon to tell you where to go get them.
I could also point out that even though I've been making fun of this app, this is an app that is designed to give us free things and we're complaining about it.
I know. I'm a bad man. I apologize.
Uncle Steve, this gift wrap is really hard to open.
Ah, humbug.
Thanks for the Xbox. You think I want to spend the day opening your stupid present or playing with it?
Let's take a break. I do want to talk about iBeacon because actually I think that is the biggest story of the week and maybe of the year. And Apple punked everyone.
They got him.
I love it. But we'll talk about that in a moment. First word from Squarespace. The best place to go when you need to get a website up and running fast. Squarespace is hosting. Beautiful. When you buy an annual plan, they give you the domain name for free. They'll register for free and they hook it up for free. So you got that going for you. And then it's the best hosting software. I mean, content management software as well. And one of the reasons I think Squarespace works so well is they're so tightly integrated. They start with 20 professionally designed, gorgeous templates. But they're just the beginning point. You know, the templates have all the features you want. Mobile responsive design means that the template itself will reformat itself for any size screen. So it just kind of reflows around. It also has, you know, you can enable commerce. They have great plugins for all the social media, you know, Twitter and Facebook and LinkedIn and Instagram and Foursquare, you know, all that stuff. And so that makes it very easy to, you know, just drag and drop those on there. You can resize and move everything around. And it never breaks. I love this. You can do all the stuff you want to do, and it never breaks the mobile responsive design, which is really cool. In fact, if you look at the code underneath the JavaScript, it's gorgeous. It's elegant. These guys took a lot of time to get it done right. Search engine optimization, of course. Your site not only can be crawled by Google, but it generates a site map automatically, which is what Google recommends. Yahoo, Bing, all the other search engines too. It's everything you need, and amazingly, for free for the first 2 weeks, so you can really get a sense of it. You can even import all your existing content If you know, it supports the major blog APIs, and in fact, when it imports your content, it imports your images, your comments, everything. They have I've never mentioned the commenting system. Really nice commenting system built in. Support 24/7. They just won a Golden Stevie for outstanding service. They really know what they're doing. And when you decide to buy after 2 weeks, if you decide to, this site is working for me, I like it. The price is right, $8 a month for the standard plan. Most people are going to go with a $16 a month plan. These prices are all when you buy an annual plan, but you can also go month to month if you want. But the annual plan is going to give you a better deal, especially when I give you our offer code. $16 a month gives you unlimited everything, including bandwidth. You'll never get a bandwidth bill. If you buy the annual plan, like I said, you get the domain name registration built in. They have a developer platform. If you are a JavaScript and a CSS guru, the developer platform is great with it. Color coding and the syntax and all of that stuff. If you want to do commerce, $24 a month. And that includes everything. They don't take transaction fees from you. It's unlimited inventory, digital, physical, services. They handle shipping calculations, tax calculations. They help you with inventory. I mean, it really is the nicest, simplest, and yet most sophisticated. And I think that goes hand in hand. It's simple because it's so sophisticated system. Squarespace.com, when you decide to buy, do me one solid here. Use the offer code MacBreak12. Because we're in the 12th month, MacBreak 12. And my gift to you is 10% off your new account. And if you buy an annual plan, that's a significant savings. You can even buy 2 years and more. So save as much as you can, 10% off on that first purchase at Mac. At MacBreak 12 is the offer code at squarespace.com. iBeacon, we've talked a little bit about it before. In fact, we've known about it for some time. Apple talked about it at the Worldwide Developer Conference. Kind of, you know, it was a slide on the...
Exactly.
I think we misunderstood.
I think there was a moment last week where Tim went into the back room and said, "Release the Kraken."
He flipped the switch.
Yeah, so
what is first describe Alex, why don't you do the honors? What is iBeacon first of all?
So iBeacon is it is Bluetooth low energy or LE, and what it allows
parenthetically, if you have a Fitbit, right, it's kind of cool because you don't have to – the Flex. You don't have to pair it.
Right.
You run the Fitbit app, and it knows it's there.
It knows it's close.
It's Bluetooth without pairing.
Right.
It's just kind of – it just kind of sees it.
Right. And with there are a couple different ways, and it turned out that there's a lot of ways to turn this on. It turns out that every iPhone, iPad since – I believe the 4S, is that correct?
Yeah.
Has had what it needs to become an iBeacon. There's also basically quarter-sized little devices that will allow it to be put into stores, and I think that's what Apple's actually using. I think Macy's is using it as well. But the big thing is it's going to let you get people down to the last foot, you know, and which is a big deal. I think that a lot of us think about being able to search Google Maps or Apple Maps or whatever to figure out where they are in San Francisco. But once you get into the mall, once you get into the store, we don't know where you are anymore. You don't know where you are anymore. And so it can be as mundane as being able to find information about an object, you know, about something that you're at the store. But it could also be like, you know, where are the restrooms? Where is this store in the mall? Where is, so there's a lot of opportunity there. There's an awful lot of opportunity when it comes to museums. A lot of people pay $20 a pop to look goofy with that little thing that they put in their ear. Have you seen those little things that and you walk around and you walk up to the different things and
you have to enter
them.
In the number or something
to
number.
Figure
out where you are.
So imagine being able to just have your headset and be able to walk around Legion of Honor and say, first of all, be able to say, where is Picasso, and have it give you directions to Picasso, and then once you get there, it gives you information about the painting that you're looking at. And of course, there's a lot of opportunity when you're in stores wanting to get more information about given objects where you don't have to use a QR code or you don't have to type it in. You're simply, I'm here in front of these, these pieces of electronics or these, all these other things, and I can get video and all kinds of other things without having to try to put it in kiosks and so on and so forth around using everybody's iPhone.
So there's two salient points, and then I'd love for you guys to discuss what it means. The two salient points are it's a two-way conversation.
Right.
So an iBeacon can send your phone information. Your phone is sending an iBeacon location.
If you choose to.
All of it is, you turn it on. Yep. The second, I think, really interesting thing is that Apple, I don't know if they ever told anyone, maybe you guys could tell me, But what we found out this week is that every iOS device since the iPhone 4S is an iBeacon. Furthermore, anything that does Bluetooth LE, and that includes Galaxy S3 and 4, the Nexus 4, later the HTC One, the Droid DNA, there are a lot of Android phones also. All of these are effectively iBeacons. iBeacon is not an Apple i. It is a standard, I believe.
I'm not sure about that, but
it's an Apple trademark, but I believe you can.
I believe it's a standard, though.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's basically Bluetooth LE is a standard, let's put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And, Apple never did. Apple ever tell anybody that this was a two-way that your phone? And the reason I mention this, and I read an article that said, for instance, LeBron James has a shoe store in Miami where every shoe display has an iPad.
Right.
So that shoe store is now already with a couple of changes in the settings, iBeacon in every single product, right? And I was talking to Mike Elgin yesterday, and he's basically saying Apple's long-term retail strategy is to make every store an Apple store, in effect. That every store the retail experience becomes like it is in the Apple store. All right, now those are the points I'd like to make, and I'd like to know what you guys think. There's a lot of privacy implications, payment implications. What does it mean for iWallet? Chris Breen, you want to kick it off?
Sure. I think this is the realization of the iPhone is money. And I think we've been talking about this for quite some time and the potential for it to be. But here's the scenario. I walk into Costco, for example, and my phone knows that I've purchased a Life Vest there 2 weeks ago. I've allowed it to communicate with the Costco app to the sensors that are in the store. I walk in and Costco says, oh, by the way, we have some wonderful kayaks that we just got in that are going to go really well
with
the life jacket that you just purchased. And here's how to get here. And it draws a little map for me and I'm down, take a left. And here's the kayak. Great. It's got a QR code on it. I scan it with my camera. I pay with it because I can on my phone once they open that up. And instead of waiting in that line that's 10 deep because three people have forgotten to update their subscription to Costco, I'm dragging my kayak out of the store and I'm on the water. So again, iPhone as money because these devices can talk to each other and they know my purchase history. They know what I might be interested in. They know where everything is in the store. They can direct me to it. And then, with a simple push of a button, I can scan a code and I can drag the item out. So I think it's hugely powerful.
Andy?
Every time I see a practical demo of this, including the demos from Apple, I nod and say, wow, I'm very happy for you, this other company, that you have this technology that will benefit you, other company, so well. I don't see how it makes my life any better. I don't see how it makes my iPhone any more valuable. It would be nice. Most of the demonstrations are stuff like are things that involve commerce. And you know what? I don't want a store to know that I was lingering in front of a certain display for 8.9 seconds, and I'm the same person who was also lingering at this other display for 4.4 seconds, and the sequence in which that sort of stuff happened. I'm not sure that they could give me information automatically that I wouldn't want to request specifically by checking my phone or by checking a kiosk. It would be nice if this were something that made my life in general better. Again, if I didn't have to like take a picture of the pillar that I park next to in a parking garage, if there were a network of beacons that would let me say, oh, by the way, here's where you are inside this parking garage, here's where you left your car, or if you're in a museum, or if you're in a point of interest and you're just curious as to, I'm at the Presidio. Where do I find the statue how do I get to the Palace of Fine Arts from here? But the problem with that is that it is based on an open open technology. It is built on Bluetooth LE, which is in pretty much damn near anything that you can buy these days that's a mobile device. But I don't know yet that it is something that absolutely anybody can create devices to establish themselves as iBeacons or apps that will actually support it. If this becomes a way for iPhone users to have a better time than anybody else, I don't know how, if I'm the owner of that mall parking garage, if I'm the owner of that other store, why is it my job to create a solution that will help maybe half of the people with phones that are going into my store? Wouldn't I much rather go for another Bluetooth LE solution that will work on absolutely everything? Moreover, something that another maker with another operating system doesn't get first dibs on that data. I don't think it's a bad idea at all. I just think that we have to wait to see how this is implemented on a widespread way. I've said before that I would love to see if Apple I would love it if Apple decided to, for instance, turn every Mac, every iDevice, and every desktop and every Apple TV device into an iBeacon, so that my phone would have an awareness of, I see that the iBeacon in the Apple TV is only 8 feet away, so he's definitely in the living room, and so the phone could understand that, okay, if he's in the living room right now, he's definitely not in the car, so I should modify my behavior so that I can give this person the information and the tools that he wants if he's inside the living room. That's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for things like that that will enhance my life. If it's a business opportunity for Apple and an opportunity for marketing people to get even more fine-grained information as to who I am and why I stopped at a lingerie display for 8.5 seconds, my phone rang, I answered the phone, I happened to be in front of a display on lacy panties. I'm not interested in panties, or at least not in that context, I'm telling you. If that's really the purpose of iBeacons, who cares? That's stupid.
I think it's much deeper than that. And by the way, YYZ did point out in the chat room that while Bluetooth LE is a standard, that iBeacon is really a set of API calls on iOS devices that give you a lot more capability. You'd have to write it by hand. And Qualcomm has something called Gimbal, which is the same idea. I think there'll be a lot of things using this.
I think the big challenge for everybody else is going to be getting everybody else collected. I think Apple has the advantage that it has potentially 250 million devices that can already work with it.
That's what blows me away. They snuck that in, right?
Right, yeah. And it's so I think that, because I think that a lot of people watch Apple, and when Apple says, we're going to go do this, everyone else starts to try to do it. And what Apple did is did something without telling anyone they were doing it. And so now they have a lot of penetration. And so it's not really 50-50 of who you're going to serve in a mall. It is, you could do it today in the mall with the Apple technology, or you can do it in a year or 2 years with some other technology. And I mean, the reality is on almost any measurement system, Apple consumers tend to spend more money. They tend to use their devices, more. I think that's shown in almost everything. Every time someone studies something, they're on there, they use the net more, they spend more money, they do all those other things. So if you're going to pick half to half, you're going to pick the one that works on the iPhone, I think. And I think that it's fine for, I think the consumer stuff is going to take a long time, and people are going to screw it up by trying to make it too consumer. Whereas I think that a lot of basic stuff, like literally I need to find something. Some of these giant malls, you walk into a Westfield mall, and it takes me, 15 minutes to figure out where the gap is, or whatever. And being able to have GPS essentially in the mall, and by the way, tells me, what's on sale as I walk by, if I want to know that, if I'm walking by Eddie Bauer, I usually want to know what's on sale.
I think there's if we focus too much on commerce, we might miss a lot of the importance of iBeacon. And of course, if all Apple does is make this, as Mike calls it in his Cult of Mac column, a digital Clippy that says, I see you're shopping for, would you like some help? That's not, I think that's annoying. I don't even know if that's something anybody, as you say, Andy, I don't know if anybody wants that. But imagine walking up to your door and it opens for you because the quick set locks are iBeacon, right?
I know where my controller is because now I know.
Right.
Because it's got something attached to it.
Interesting thing for me, in Canada, I can't remember the last time I actually used a Visa. We have NFC on our Visa cards for 3 or 4 years. I tap for my gas. I tap to pay for my food. I tap to pay for my groceries. And Apple didn't use NFC because to them it was a chipset and not a feature set. And they're going to use iBeacon instead. But it's interesting to see, I think half the time there's chess moves that they're making that are supposed to go someplace. And the other half, it's serendipitous because they see how the other pieces are moving and things, they make the same kind of realizations that we do. And if you look at the evolution of the iPhone, it's had sensors since the beginning. It could know its orientation. It could know ambient light, and they've been adding to that. It got GPS. It got, rotation around gravity. Siri made a microphone go from something you just talked into to something that could have a conversation with you. They've bought the sensor company for visual sensing, so maybe the EyeSight camera will get smarter. Touch ID made the home button not just a clicking thing, but something that can actually read biometrics. And if you start adding iBeacon to it, the iPhone knew where it was, but now it has an interactive relationship with where it is. So it starts to understand its environment. It starts to understand us. And I think it goes way beyond commerce. I'm sure we'll see commerce implementations because those are sort of obvious and they make money, so they'll be well-funded. But I think exactly what everyone here has been saying, that it'll be, your parking. There's a free parking spot. If you advance your car this way, we'll guide you to it. The meeting at the office is up here. Oh, by the way, your blood sugar is low. There's a vending machine. We'll do a transaction and give you a cookie bar. You know, right
I'm
now,
not there's so having an iBeacon catheter. It's just not happening, Renee.
I know you're more
complacent in Canada, but
there's just so many ways that it can become that the device itself can go from being dumb to being truly smart and aware.
Well, and imagine being in a conference. I mean, a lot of us are going to go to CES or NAB or whatever and say, show me where all the devices that, like, show me where all the TVs
amazing
are.
For
or whatever.
CES.
And so then it shows me a map of here's where they all are. Okay, well, show me how to get to here. And now I'm now I'm no longer wandering through the South Hall trying to figure out something that was in the Central Hall or, you know, and it could create, tour. It could create a tour. Like, I want to see a tour of all the, cameras at NAB, and it could generate a tour, you know, and give me turn-by-turn directions within the the Las Vegas Convention Center. Those are the kind of things that are possible.
I just think that the next really big transformative experience for users is going to be context awareness. It really is going to be, when I wake up my phone, I'm not going to necessarily see the same thing I saw 3 hours ago, because it's going to understand that it's in a new place or even just a new context. And so that technology is a big help for that sort of thing. My sole area of real skepticism here is that this is the sort of thing that only works if everybody really gets on board the same thing at the same time. Apple, sometimes they introduce a technology that they introduce very, very strong, and then it just doesn't work as well as they wanted to, and they will maintain it, but not really, really emphatically support, emphatically promote it. And this will still be a technology that is just for the kids in the Apple pool. I really think that this is a situation where if Apple really wanted to have a positive impact, they would essentially say, here is our standard. We have developed it in consortium with these four other people, and so we're going to be the first ones to do it, because we're the only company with the ability to do a rollout in mobile, desktop, operating system, application software, and retail at the same time. But after people see how well this open technology works in the Apple stores and with our devices, you're going to see them on Android, you're going to see them in the museums, you're going to see them on roads. I mean, things like roadside assistance. If you can put cheap $5 chips inside whatever little service item has to go into the highway, so that when you do break down, your phone knows exactly what exit you're next to, what part of the road you're at, so that service vehicles can find you. Or if you sort of tumble off the road a little bit, it's better that they don't know within 60 yards if they know within a couple of yards. So that's my primary, not objective, but qualm about it, that if Apple said this is an open standard and anybody's free to use it, I'd be 110% enthusiastic about it. As is, it's okay. Nice news for people who have iPhones. Nice news for stores and other places that decide they want to support something that's iPhone only, which is not going to be a small percentage of the people, of the groups out there. But it's not as exciting a piece of information, news, as it could be.
Well, and it's software, so they could add others. Like, if someone does come up with a standard, or Google has a computer, like, I like the fact that there could be competition. Google could give out free dongles in every Chromecast. There could be a fan, and then maybe eventually a standard will come up. And because it's all software, Google could add it, and Apple could add it, and then we'll end up getting the best of all these bright minds.
Well, and I don't know if Apple needs to make it open source or an open standard, but I do think that it would behoove them to invest in the rollout. So I think that what Apple, I think, does a lot is they'll introduce something and some of the stuff takes off, and Apple expects everyone else to jump on it. You know, and it's nice at least they're using it in their own stores, but they should be like working, for instance, with a few key museums to really build out a showcase of what this can do, rather than wait for people to invest. You know, Apple's got the money. They're doing buybacks and spend $1 billion, literally spend $1 billion on iBeacon to develop. You know, ideas around, let's say, Gettysburg, or around, a great art museum, or, you know, or all of the above, to really show that, or a great mall, to show what you can do with it and get people excited about it. But what Apple will do, or what is possible, is Apple will, you know, release it. They'll do it in their own store, and they'll expect everyone else to, you know, think that it's great and be willing to spend $1 million on making it work. And I think that that's where this ends up turning into kind of a...
That's what Andy's saying. Is it, you know, no, but if it's an Apple only solution, it's not enough.
No, I think if it's an Apple only solution and Apple put real money into developing
really
proof of concepts,
they,
you know, in the same way with iBooks could run you know, run ebooks, you know, traditional ebooks into the ground if Apple had really invested in the iBook Author and really invested in producing lots and lots
them
of great
do that
books.
With iBook Author is a very good example.
It's good, you know,
it
so,
go anywhere.
But if Apple really put money behind that and really pushed it, they could have made ebooks,
you know where Apple could really make it
or a newsstand.
You know where Apple has a very good relationship with Disney. What if they put this in all the Disney parks?
Did you see my post this morning?
No.
I was proposing, like, instead of doing buybacks, what Apple should do is buy Disney.
Right. Well, they kind of have
well, they know
a good relationship.
They could do it with cash.
Yeah.
You know, so the thing is that Disney's worth about $125 billion, and I posted this on my G+ thing, is that I think that Apple...
Well, let's not get sidetrapped by Disney.
But I think that they should buy Disney because they could...
Buy Disney.
No, but look at all these... look at what iBeacon does to Disney Park, and look at what...
I do think there's pressure on Apple to do something with 100...
Oh, great. So now Apple has their own proprietary
you have to have an iPhone to use this amusement park.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We'll take full advantage.
The nice thing about Apple is their ability, like their speed to market. If Phil Schiller feels that his house is 2 degrees too cold, iOS can have a solution for that in a year, where a lot of other companies would have multiple levels of management and product roadmaps and things, you know, to get in the way. So, yeah, there are stuff like iBooks and newsstands.
FaceTime, supposed to be open, never was.
There's a lot of things that don't get the continued attention they need, but at least they get a jump start and a chance at the market because of the way Apple is structured.
What does this do to NFC? It seems to me this is an HD DVD moment for NFC.
NFC's dead.
We wondered why Apple didn't include NFC in its phones. Now you know.
I mean,
NFC, you have to touch something, right?
I'm not saying iBeacon will win, but I'm saying that Bluetooth LE will win and NFC is dead.
The reason NFC has a chance is for privacy? Because you have to be much more explicit with NFC. You have to touch something. Andy, what are you going to say?
I was going to say NFC is a basic technology that does 100 things really, really well. I've got a bunch of Bluetooth speakers here that on my iPhone, I have to tap, 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 listen, tap, tap, tap to get it to work. On if I have an NFC phone, all I have to do is just tap it onto the top of the speaker. It establishes the connection, establishes the Bluetooth, and it's working immediately.
That's amazing.
And that's just one example. It's not just for electronic payments. That's not just for checking in. Here's specifically where I am. I've just tapped this at this sticker that I put on this door jamb, and I've also told my system exactly where the sticker is. It's not just for that. It's for a million different things. And also, Leo, when you do make that point, there's another difficulty that a technology like iBeacons is going to have is that we are the incoming generation of tech users are not the same as our generation. They have a better understanding of exactly the problems of privacy. They are a little bit less trustful of these companies that they didn't actually grow up. They didn't grow up with. Apple was already the behemoth, huge technology company when they bought their first iPhones, and I would be concerned about a technology where if I walk through, it's just always, always, always collecting data off my phone. I do have faith in Apple. I do think that they've in the past shown a lot of respect for personal privacy. I'm sure there's going to be a switch somewhere in settings where you can say, do not broadcast my locations unless I give permission to. But I also think that this whole system won't work as well as it will in the commercials, unless you do say, yeah, by all means, let stores track me as I go throughout these places. So I don't believe it's an NFC versus Bluetooth LE thing. These are both the technologies that cost next to nothing to put inside a device that take next to no power in putting in there. So really, my idea of the ideal is a phone that does do Bluetooth LE, which is pretty much all of them, and also does do NFC, which is pretty much all of them except for the iPhone.
Yeah. I mean, the speaker example, even better, isn't it, if the speaker is iBeacon enabled and as soon as you're within range of the speaker, it knows you're there and you can send anything to it. No tapping involved, no pairing involved.
Yeah, those are chipsets, and Apple usually focuses on feature sets. And, you know, maybe one day they'll put NFC in because it solves a problem they can't solve with anything else. But that moment. Yeah, if they don't need it, they won't use it. That's the typical method that they employ.
But I think you guys are right to remind us of the historic precedent that Apple often comes up with something that is just, yeah, and then just doesn't.
And I think it's frustrating. And they have so much money. Like, and I get that, you know, it's like, just spend some money on it. They don't have to do it internally. You know, hire companies to do that. I mean,
Apple's been holding on to this $150 billion cash like it's the end of the world, probably because they remember what happened the last time Steve was gone, and they got within 100 days of
I think it's collapse. Just that, I think that they're so focused on what they're doing, they just don't need it.
There's so much pressure from Carl Icahn, and I have to think many other investors, to either to give us the money. If you've got $150 billion, Icahn says give us money, that maybe that pressure from shareholders will force Apple to buy something instead of giving them the money. I mean, Icahn will be pissed, but who cares about
Icahn's
that?
Company.
Yeah. I mean, that does put pressure. Apple has this great war chest, which they've done very little with.
Buy Disney.
How much is Disney worth?
$125 billion. So they wouldn't have to spend the cash. But they wouldn't have to. No, you'd spend.
You'd have to repatriate.
$60, $70 billion plus stock. It'd be nothing.
Repatriate.
How about Euro Disney? Yeah, Euro Disney.
They'd have to take it back?
Not necessarily.
They could buy Euro Disney.
Yeah, there's a lot of ways of moving that cash around. So but the point is that they, I mean, you know, it would, doing something with the money would be, is the reason that everyone's asking for the money back is because they're not doing anything with it. And right. They could.
And they want to get, everybody wants it, is what it is. The shareholders say, well, give it to us. Right. It's just sitting in a pool.
And that's silly because they're not doing anything with it, but they're not doing anything with it right now. That means that a year from now, when they have an opportunity to acquire a company that really is spackles in the perfect hole they've got in a strategy that they're not going to move on for 3 or 4 years, they got the $280 million in the banks. They could just write that check.
But to buy Disney.
That Carl Icahn's not known for his long-term thinking, I think.
Well, and Apple's not a reactive company. Whether it's coming from customers or Carl Icahn or anybody else saying, you must do this, Apple doesn't listen to anybody pretty much except itself and say, no, we know exactly what we plan to do.
They kind of feel pressure, though, from the
stockholders. You know, is that going to make a difference?
Yeah, well, Tim Cook's had lunch a couple of times with Carl Icahn. He's not ignoring him.
No, he's not ignoring him, but I don't think that he's saying the right words, but I'm sure that they're...
Why do you think the fact that they're doing a buyback? I mean, I think that that's not something Steve Jobs would have ever done.
That's the compromise, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the buyback. I mean, and you do enough buybacks, and then you don't have to buy back anything else again.
You don't have to listen to anybody.
Yeah, exactly. So, it's. I mean, I think that can be... But I think that it would be interesting. Again, I'm not saying like $1 billion to get iBooks off the ground or to get iBeacon off the ground is just chicken feed.
They don't do it.
I'm saying that that's my complaint is that they
Apple has something almost as valuable as maybe more valuable than $150 billion in the bank. They have $500 million credit card numbers,
right.
And every single iBeacon is tied to it
right
now. So there's some value to that. I mean, that's a pretty big ecosystem.
There's a lot of stuff that they sit on until they don't. Which is their typical method of doing things. And they have tons of money. And to Alex's point, they could hire people, but typically they have a very small team and they run very lean and they only have it's like the eye of Sauron. You know, it's got this blinding, burning light on a couple of projects and everything else ends up frozen in the dark for years.
It's, you know, and
good reference, Renee.
Actually, it's not the first time the eye of Sauron has come up within the context. I think
it used to be referred to as the Steve eye.
I think that's absolutely true, and I think we the chattering classes, the nattering classes, forget that Apple's a company with, you know, constraints and business issues and so forth, and that internally it probably looks very different than it looks externally.
And also, they don't control the whole world, and that believe it or not, that does influence their decisions. So when they want to make a real world move like this, they know that they can't control everything that every retailer, every public space, and every user of every device wants to do.
But I gotta say, and I'm gonna quote your article today, Renee, at iMore.com, the contextual awakening: how sensors are making mobile truly brilliant. That this is, if we talk about the Internet of Things, this is a huge and sudden move on Apple to have 200 million plus things that suddenly just woke up,
right?
In effect, right? Am I overstating that?
No, I mean, they can understand the world around them a little bit. They're getting better with iBeacons. They can understand each other through networking, and they're starting to understand us through things like Siri and, you know, potentially better eyesight cameras and Touch ID. And when you start to be able to put those things together, depending on how comfortable we are with them, I mean, like Siri does not do what Google Now does, but, you know, conceivably it could at some point. As much as we're willing to trust them, they can start taking on these interactive tasks and they'll be very good at it. It's not sort of like, you know, Skynet or the Terminator where they become aware, but they give this sort of illusion of understanding and of sentience that I think is incredibly helpful if we let them do it.
I feel like there's a huge opportunity. And I wish some company would just say, privacy be damned. Full speed ahead, because I think people make noise about privacy, but when it comes down to convenience, you're going to opt for convenience, and people are just going to do it.
Have you forgotten about more than Google and Facebook? I think they've pretty much
Facebook's
said that,
the privacy be damned guy, aren't they? Yeah.
Well,
even
yeah,
they,
yeah
but even Google they back down. I mean, somebody should just be unapologetic and say, look, you don't have to plan our space, but we're going to take all your information. We're going to give you some stuff in return, and if you don't like it, don't do it.
Even Eric Schmidt hates drones. I mean, there's a limit to everything.
Yeah, I guess.
but that does illustrate the point. One of the reasons why people are more comfortable with Google than Facebook is because Google delivers a hell of a lot of value for the information that they collect about you. Google now, right. The first time that you have an Android phone, and the first time you have a phone that has Google now, and the first time more than anything else, you are in an airport. And you just simply tap a button, and without even attending to get information, it says, oh, I understand that now that you're on your way to Atlanta, here is your flight. It's 20 minutes late, but here's the gate it's going to depart from. When you get there, the weather in Atlanta is this. Here are the directions from the airport to the hotel that you booked. This is all information that you decided to give to Google. That's something that immediately makes me think that, wow, okay, I got something back for this. This is a lot of information that I would have to dip into 12 different apps to get. If it turns out that it's just collecting information and there's no obvious benefit to me back at it, that's going to be the reason why I dip into settings and say iBeacon/off.
Which, by the way, you can do, right? I mean, the answer to the privacy concern is this is it opt-in? I think it is opt-in. I think you have to turn it on.
It's not just the privacy, though. It's the fear. And it's the same thing the car companies tell us when they say, you know, we could be doing so much more than just parallel parking. Right. But people are afraid of their cars driving them. So we have to do it step by step and feature by feature. And it's the same way Google Now and Siri, they just keep adding services. They start small enough that we're comfortable. And then they build towards, you know, they take us by the hand and lead us towards the future rather than just shoving us into the pool.
I'm so ready to have my car drive.
If I were an entrepreneur.
That's all I got to say.
And I would just gamble it all and say, look, we're going to be explicit. We're not going to hide this, but we're just going to take every bit of information you give us. We'll give you every bit of value we can for it.
That sounds like Google.
And you're going to have benefit out of it. Well, yeah. unfortunately, there's regulators. Gosh darn it. Yeah. That's why Larry Page wants to live on an island.
It's the same thing that happened with FaceTime. I mean, they got sued by patent trolls, and it's the same thing that happened with iBooks. They got oversight. I mean, like Andy said earlier, the world around us.
Oversight.
The world around us sometimes suppresses technology, sometimes well and sometimes unnecessarily, but they have to live in that world.
Yeah, and the other thing is that we trust Google and Apple because we know that them and the other like big tech companies had a full page ad in the New York Times saying, look, there's an open letter to the government saying that we're going to do our best to protect our users' privacy. We will, and if you keep knocking on our door insisting on our users' privacy, we're going to make you tell us exactly why we legally are forced to do that. If Leo starts his own data collection company, I'm sure he'd come up with some really, really awesome benefits to my giving personal information, but you know, the government is going to drive past the building. Note that, okay, he's got about a $32,000 car in the driveway, not an $800,000 car in the driveway. I bet that if we sue his butt, he'll just have to turn over whatever we ask.
But I mean, I think when we look at like the That's ebook, like
a guy with a cloth interior does not have a war chest to fight the United States government.
Well, but I think that the iBooks, ebooks, you know, whole issue and regulation is Apple playing small. Like what they did is they tried to play against a, you know, price, you know, rather than we're going to create a whole new sector, which is interactive books, you know, and we're going to use iBook Author, and we're going to keep on developing it. We're going to make it great, and we're going to make you embarrassed to be looking at a 2D book, you know, within 2 or 3 years. But instead, they just tried to go for low hanging fruit, and they got, you know, didn't work out. You know, and I think
you're not bitter.
Bitter at all. I don't care. I'm just saying it was stupid. I mean, it was like, why?
You were so excited when they announced iBooks Author.
No, I was, and
you used it too, right?
Oh, we've used it. It's just limited. It's just hard to, you know, and when you want to do anything complicated, you just realize they needed to keep on going, you know, and so you're now putting yourself into it, and you don't know if they're ever going to move it forward in any significant way, so you don't commit to it, you know, and so the thing is that, you know, the reality is that there's a, you know, the education industry, and I don't mean K-12, I mean everything. When we buy a car, we're going to expect an app. When we buy a new microwave, we're going to expect an app. We're going to expect an app when we walk into the hotel room, and we're going to expect to get video training on everything, including K-12. And it's a massive business that Apple's giving away, you know, and because they have it. I mean, they could own that business, and iBeacon is a piece of that puzzle. But instead, you know, I just feel like, you know, like with ebooks, I mean, who cares? It's text.
Well, you could, yeah.
You know, so it's just, you know, like it is like so last century. Text is like last century, last millennium.
What's
unfortunately
happening now is people are rolling their own for the most part. They're making PDFs with video.
Well, that's great. That's exactly what we want. I mean, there are very, very few things that consistently make me roll my eyes about Apple announcements. And one is when they do what I believe is a very, very sincere spiel about the importance of education and how we need a new generation of textbooks. And then if this were like a one-on-one conversation, I'd say, oh, that's great. And so you really want every school system to support this. So, of course, you're making this into a platform that everybody can use. No, we're going to insist that you have a Mac to author, and then we're going to insist you have an iPad to read this sort of stuff. And even our iBooks app is not going to be cross-platform because we really don't want anybody who doesn't have an Apple to have access to this. I mean, this is why there's even now I think we're kind of falling into that trap. We're saying all these really wonderful things about iBeacons, which really are just things we're saying about Bluetooth LE. I can't think of anything that we've talked about the potential of iBeacons that cannot be done with this phone right here that is not made by Apple. It is a simple, any device with Bluetooth LE can do pretty much anything that was mentioned about that.
Well, and I think that I think kind of halfway in between is either Apple needs to decide to make it an open standard, or they need to invest what it takes to turn it into the thing that everyone's using. And I don't think they do either very well. You know, like, so the thing is that if they want to keep it closed, then be ready to put their money where their mouth is and to, you know, really invest billions of dollars in making it really work well. You know, and that's what they're not doing.
If you want to change the world, not just the percentage of them that happen to buy your products.
I think that they could just make it.
Isn't that opposite of what Apple's strategy is?
No, I think they could leave it closed.
And of course, they're a company and they have to do what's
in
their best.
I think it's fine for them to leave it closed. I think that the main thing is they just, if they're going to leave it closed, they need to spend real money behind every time they release something to sell it. It's not going to always sell itself. I think that's the issue.
Believe control controls experience, which is really important to them.
They believe, say that again, they believe control.
They believe that they keep it closed because they want to control the experience.
Right.
Like if it's end-to-end Apple,
right,
they can ensure exactly what you're going to get delivered when you have that iBeacon and you have that tour.
It's a philosophy.
And they feel incredible pain when, like, the AT&T network goes down or FedEx can't deliver the iPads.
Because they don't control it.
Because they have no control over that, yeah.
Boy, that comes right from Steve Jobs' psychology, probably.
Yeah.
Huh? Yeah.
And again, I don't think it's a problem. I think it's just that they need to take out of the hundreds of billions that they have, they need to take some billions and push it forward.
Can you jumpstart something?
Oh, yeah.
Spend a few billions and mm-hmm. that will make it happen?
Yep.
I don't know. I see that. You see that happen with industries all the time where they try to make a standard and they can't, you know?
Well, I don't think that, you know, I think that there's, Apple has an enormous amount of, they already have the penetration, they already have income, they already have an enormous amount of cash. They have a lot of things going for themselves, you know? And so the thing is the ability to invest, especially into something new, there's a lot of, you know, it's harder if they leverage an existing market. And not change anything because they'll get into antitrust, which is where they got themselves into with the ebooks. But if they create something completely different and then use an enormous amount of force to push it forward, I think that they have a lot of other opportunities. And it's not like they create something out of nowhere. The interactive world is coming very quickly, and you know they're just not. They could own it. You know, and they're not.
Well, the problem is, I think in part, the problem is that they have uncooperative partners when you're talking about entertainment or talking about e-textbooks.
But that's my argument of why you buy Disney and then you just show people what you could do with that.
Well, yeah, but do they also have to buy Pearson and do they have to buy HarperCollins? Yeah. And well, I mean, specifically when we talk about e-textbooks, because this is something I'm dealing with my daughter, where she's carrying around 80 pounds of books on her 12-year-old shoulders, which is silly. And I talk to the school and say, why don't they kick in an ebook version of this? I don't even care if it's interactive. If it could just go on a Kindle, I'd be happy about it. But they just say, well, you know, the textbook companies don't offer that kind of bargain because they want you to buy the paper.
Right.
They want you to spend the $60 on the paper.
Well, they're
which
all,
is obscene.
All the textbook. We've
60's nothing, Chris.
We've got kids in college. All the textbook companies are spending money on interactive. I mean, they know paper is going out. I mean, so all the Hoffman Mifflin and Pearson, they're all spending a lot of money on R&D. The reality is they don't know it well enough. It doesn't help Apple to get that because the raw content could be recreated, you know, and they're not going to. You know, they don't need that. I mean, we're going to take a break.
I need to take a break. But when we come back, Siri in your living room, possibly. It's already in your Honda. And an analyst who says Apple and Microsoft should merge to fight Google. I don't think that's such a bad idea.
Let Scott Forstall run both companies.
I don't know. There's lots of people think, not lots. I get tweets from people. Maybe it's one guy who thinks Scott Forstall should run Microsoft. That just seems like such a bad idea.
I think that'd be awesome.
For Apple.
Exactly.
Our show today brought to you by, hey, by the way, great panel. Love you guys. Chris Breen is here from MacWorld.com. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie from iMore.com and from the Pixel Corps. Alex Lindsay. You couldn't put together a team of four guys who know more about Mac.
Alex is the only one of us who didn't wave at the viewer.
Would you wave?
Take from that what you will, viewer.
Yeah, he doesn't like you. I can tell.
Jazz hands.
Our show today brought to you by Personal Capital. We interviewed the guy who founded Personal Capital.
What is Personal Capital?
I think this is just so so cool. I want to say like four words at the same time. Cool, innovative, exciting, and free. Mm-hmm. Bill Harris, the guy who started, was the CEO of PayPal. He was the CEO of Intuit. And while he was at Intuit, he really watched how people, you remember the days when everybody went out and bought Quicken, or if you were on Microsoft Money, and you'd get your statement. And you'd enter in all the transactions for the month, and you'd do the budgeting. I did that. I loved it. It was like the number one use for personal computers. I typed in programs from Compute Magazine and BASIC on my Atari 800 to do that. That's what, like, the first thing you wanted to do. Well, I think Bill realized that while he was running Intuit, that really the best way to do this nowadays, since all that information is already available to you, is have a company collate that all, put together a dashboard, let you know what your financial situation is without any data entry on your part. This is truly a next-generation financial advisor. And once you get this dashboard, then the next question is, what do you do with it? I mean, in fact, that came up all the time. Well, now I've spent all this time entering in my stuff. What am I checking the bank to see if their math is right? I think we've learned that the math is right.
Most of the time.
And I mean, come on, really? Do you? I don't really feel like I need to check the bank's math anymore. So what do you do with it? Well, what Bill said is now you have an understanding of your financial life. You can now invest sensibly. You can think about where your money is, what it's doing, whether you're wasting money. And that's where Personal Capital comes in. The more progress you make, it really is a catch-22. In your financial life, the more complicated it is to manage, but the more you need to manage it. You've got account, checking, savings, retirement. I hope you have an investment account. Of course, you got a mortgage if you have a house. You got a car loan. I mean, all of this stuff is all floating around, and it's a big fuzzy cloud around your head. Makes it hard to make investment decisions. That's where Personal Capital comes in. They say it's like a GPS for your financial life at your fingertips. I just think it's the kind of thing you really want. They've got a financial dashboard. They've got mobile apps. And, of course, financial advisors that will help you invest. And signing up just takes a minute. It's absolutely free at personalcapital.com/MacBreak. Personalcapital.com. There's Bill walking his dog on the marina. He is a really neat guy. You go back and look at the triangulation we did with him about a year ago. That's when I started using Personal Capital, and I just love it. Personalcapital.com/MacBreak. If the time has come to kind of make sense of your financial life.
Someday.
You're a perfect example. You're too busy to make sense of your financial life.
I have a wife that is very good at that.
But fortunately, you have Carlita.
Carlita is the saving grace. Yeah. Otherwise, I'd be
if you don't have a Carlita
on the street.
Yeah.
I'd be on the street.
You know, Carlita should use Personal Capital.
I'm going to show it to her.
Absolutely. So a Siri dock for your living room. It's a smart dock. This comes from Apple Insider. That would bring Siri. This is from a U.S. See, I'm always nervous about talking about patent decisions because, as you know, every company patents everything nowadays more than ever because of patent trolls. But Apple published a patent application that involves a smart dock that listens for cues to activate and communicate with the voice recognition functions of the device docked in it, like the iPhone and the iPad. Then the only reason I give this more credence, perhaps, than the average patent is that's exactly what the Kinect does. That's exactly what, Ford Sync does. This is clearly where we're headed, and Apple has this Siri technology. Seems like they should use it.
Put it in the Mac at the very least.
Right. It's not even in a Mac.
Yeah. I think that the computers get more useful when we don't necessarily have to take them out of our pockets or walk over to them in order to use them. So I've been, for 10, 15 years, I've been shocked that we haven't seen a company – do this sort of stuff before. Just if I'm walking through a room on my way out the door, I really want the ability to say, Siri, what's the weather today? What's the weather in Boston at 2 p.m. today? As I'm trying to contemplate which coat to take off the rack.
I just want to be able to scream, where's my keys, and say, have it tell me.
Do
it's,
we
it's
add
under the couch.
Because you've got an iBeacon on it.
Exactly.
You know what? I can actually do that with my Moto X. I can say, okay, yeah. Google now. And what is the command? I can't remember. Like, where's my phone? Right. And the phone will start screaming. Yeah. Swear to God. And so what like you end up doing if you've lost your phone, and I tried this the other day, you walk around in the house like an idiot going, okay, Google now, where's my phone? Okay, Google now, where's my phone?
I want it to sound like a goat. If it's going to scream.
Leo, in your house, don't 19 Android phones start screaming at you at once?
Awesome.
No, because it's only a Moto X. This is a Moto X feature. You're right, and that's it would be nice. Let me just see what the sound is. I can't remember what it is. Do you remember, Andy, what the command is?
Oh, I don't know.
Okay,
oh,
Google now. Find my phone. Where's my phone? Maybe it's find my phone, yeah. Okay, Google now. Find my phone. See if it does that. Uh-oh. That's it.
Yeah.
That's not screaming.
My friend, while we were driving,
look, it says, you found me, and it keeps doing that.
Those things
right
you saw.
You found me. You idiot.
I was in the cushion. Couldn't you see me? Oh, my God.
You have found me. Never let me go. Once you have found me.
I look forward to the day where I'm in the back bedroom and I'm shouting out to this doc, where are my glasses? And
where?
My wife's going, what? Where? And my daughter's going, what?
Where are my pants?
No, I'm not talking to you. I'm talking to the thing and the thing. And where are my glasses? They're on your head, you idiot. What are you talking about? Shut up.
That's Jim Dalrymple's post from this week was shut up, Siri, because he had to explain to his wife who he was telling to shut up.
Shut up, Siri. Yeah. His wife's not named Siri, is it? That would be very confusing.
He wanted to make sure she understood he was talking to Siri.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Well, that Siri could be a good example of, as we were talking about, another technology that Apple really could have owned the world and just kind of let it die out.
I use it every day.
Do you? All right.
Yeah, me too.
Seems like it could be better.
I mean, driving back from Petaluma, Leo, and my friend Phil Nickinson from Android Central dropped his Moto X into the car, and he said, you know, Google now, find my phone. And it just started pinging under his seat while he seatbelted in, trying to reach between the thing to find it.
the rest of the way.
It wouldn't stop, and he couldn't reach it. And we ended up doing all sorts of gymnastics inside to try to get it.
Okay.
Because in Canada, it's illegal to pull over to use your phone.
We were on one of your beautiful San Franciscan highways.
And I just should point out that there's no technology that's smart enough to defend itself against stupid users.
Yeah.
No.
Not stupid.
But that's another example of things that subtle plays that really change how you interact with these devices. Hey, my video is frozen. Can you hear me?
Yeah, but it's at least frozen on a nice smile.
It's a very nice photo. Smile. If you're going to be frozen, that is the phrase.
Screen cap that quick so that when Andy's not with us.
Yeah, we can just put that on.
We can just put that on.
Last known photo. I've been using the Nexus 5 as my daily driver for a few weeks now. And even just the ability to do total hands-off control and not have to tap a button in order to tell this device to shut up and listen, that's a big deal. That means that I know that it's right there on my desk. It's only 2 feet away. But so many times now I will be typing, working on something, and I need to convert amp hours into milliwatt hours. And I will do, you know, okay, Google now, what is 3.2 times, I don't know, 3.2 times the watt hours divided by, excuse me, times 1,000 divided by the voltage, and we'll say the
I love it when it does that.
And then I can still type, okay, so this is a 2,200 milliamp hour battery in the new iPad.
Right. Like,
yes, awesome.
Isn't that awesome? By the way, Andy's doing his best Jeff Dunham right now. Your lips are not moving. It's good.
I've got a puppet, and he hates all gay people. What do you got to say about the gay people, puppet?
Yeah,
I hate them all.
It's not me. Puppet. It's the puppet. It's not Andy. It's puppet Andy. iOS adoption rates, iOS 7 adoption rates, according to the App Store usage numbers, a whopping 74%. That's pretty good.
I opened up one of my an iPod Touch, and I opened it up, and it was still in iOS 6, and I felt like I had dropped back into the dark ages.
Well, and iOS 6 is pretty new itself, and that's 22%, so 96% of iOS users are using the last two versions.
Right.
That's a lot better than Android.
And you have to remember that iPad 1 can't use iOS 7, right. iPhone 3GS can't right. use it, and people waiting for jailbreaks haven't updated yet.
So it may well be that almost everybody who could has.
Yeah.
That's pretty impressive, especially given that I just hate iOS 7. Am I the only one who still doesn't like it?
They do their best to move you along to it, though. They really want you to use iOS 7, you know. So and plus, you can't go back. So I'm sure there's a small percentage of people there who thought, yeah, I think I'd rather go back to iOS 6, and there's no way back.
There's a
that's the only reason why I've been telling people to hold off until they really have verified that every single app and service they use still works, because it's like, oh, it's going to be such a nightmare if the one app you need doesn't work anymore. It is not it's not going to be a subtle problem.
Jesus Diaz has done a Tumblr on Apple's on the dumbest, sloppiest mistakes in it's called Sloppy UI on iOS 7. Actually, it's not just iOS 7. It's a lot of different places. But there's quite a few things in iOS 7 that could probably...
They ran out of time. I mean, they started in December, and they ran to WWDC, and they just didn't have time to finish.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, this can be kind of ugly, frankly. But the thing is, they've had... how many updates? Two updates now. It just seems like if there's screen locks, there's no way to hang up the call without first sliding the bar, entering your passcode, then hitting the button to hang up. I've had that happen, but that's not the end of the world.
It bothers me a lot less now that I can reset it. I had a phone that didn't have you couldn't turn off.
Yeah.
And then it would lock up, and then there was no way to burn the battery out until
turn the camera on. Batteries are such a nice thing.
I know. I was like,
yeah. Sounds has two different icons. There's lots of things that you just have to think that. So you think it was just they ran out of time, huh?
No, they absolutely did. I mean, usually, if Scott Forstall hadn't left, if Johnny Ive hadn't assumed control of the design, iOS 7 would have looked a lot like iOS 6. It would have had background downloads and a few of the new multitasking features and whatever else was on the roadmap. But when he left and Johnny Ive took over, they decided, you know, very late in the cycle, they only had and Apple's not going to move WWDC, and they're not going to move the new phone release. And to some degree, they are now slaves of their release cycle. They had to do an incredibly ambitious project. And as we remember, WWDC, the iPad version wasn't even ready for beta when they released the iPhone version. It was 2 weeks later. And they hit that deadline about as hard as you can hit a deadline. And I think they absolutely just ran out of runway. And they're going to fix a lot of stuff over the course of this year.
Most of it's cosmetic, right? I mean, yeah. I for a long time I had rebooting phone. That seems to have been fixed.
Rebooting,
and that's an important distinction. The phone feels like it's rebooted, but because you see the Apple icon, but really it's just Springboard relaunching.
Yeah, and there's a lot of stability stuff they have to fix, and a lot of edge cases that they have to fix. But
so, is the advice still to wait? One of the 74%.
I just get the iOS 7.
Just getting me too.
the benefits far outweigh the drawbacks. There's just so much you can do with it now.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Again, it depends. I would definitely go to the message boards, go to the forums, and if there's
your stuff,
you have a good idea. Oh, dang it. Okay. Well, I'll still this will be the radio theater of the air. I'll be like one of those correspondents.
Picture, though. Yeah. I love it.
At least you weren't blinking.
I got the lighting right. All I'm saying is that we all know like what the three really killer features that we have. That this is not an iPhone or this is not an iPad. If it can't do this thing. Definitely, for the first time, check to make sure that feature still works or that third-party app still works. I still have not updated my iPad yet because I've got a problem with a single app that I haven't really clicked yet, and I really want to see if I can keep that one going for another.
I mean, I'm just looking through comments in the chat room. iMovie looks like crap, and it's harder to use. Fonts are too small on iOS 7.
You can dynamically adjust those now. I mean, there's dynamic fonts in
iOS 7. 7 dies with 50% battery left. Frustrating, but not the end of the world. Respringing is not fixed, says Giancarlo. Respringing happens on the iPhone 4 for him. iPhone 4S for Hitchens 52. resprings all the time.
To be fair, though, Leo, I mean, I run a fairly popular Apple website, and I get exactly the same complaints. Anytime you update your operating system, you pay more attention to things, and things break. And iOS 2 was horrible. iOS 3 was horrible. iOS 4 was horrible. 5 and 6 were more incremental, so they had fewer problems. But overall, we tend to forget the pain of the past and remember very, very vividly the pain of the current.
Pain of the present, we always remember. Yep. What about Bitcoin, and why is Apple down on Bitcoin? We're talking about the most recent Bitcoin app, Glyph, which is an interesting app. It's a secure messaging app that could be used, among other things, to transfer Bitcoins from one Glyph user to another. Apple says you cannot release Glyph or a Glyph update until you take that out. A number of Bitcoin apps have also been pulled. Apple says we can't allow, according to our terms of service, we can't allow technologies that are illegal in any of the countries we operate in any of our apps. But I don't think, well, China has banned financial institutions from handling Bitcoin transactions, but does allow person-to-person transactions. I don't think Bitcoin is illegal, to my knowledge, in any jurisdiction yet. Is Apple being proactive? Hello? Did everybody freeze?
No.
Okay.
We all stepped back. And
yeah. I mean, Bitcoin's not porno, although you could say, thanks to Silk Road, it has the reputation of being used for drugs. But I don't think that's the only way it's used. Apple has pulled every Bitcoin app, as far as I know. Blockchain, Bitpack, Bitcoin Express, Coinbase, and now Glyph.
It's new, and Apple's incredibly conservative in the App Store, and at some point, someone very executive will make a decision about it, but until then, it's probably, oh, look, world's first digital currency. We have no idea what this means. Let's just wait.
Yeah. This is an example of discretionary use of power. I don't think they have a specific reason why they don't want a part of this, but given the really horrendous potential for disaster, both in terms of having essentially a app that consumes CPU and something that can be used for massive scale financial fraud, maybe it's okay to have 498,998 apps available on the App Store instead of the full 500,000.
Yeah, and you know, I think you're right. Apple doesn't want a big story about somebody losing $33 million in Bitcoin on his iPhone.
Because it would be Apple in the headline.
Right. So maybe it's simply...
Thailand, by the way.
It's illegal in Thailand?
It's illegal in Thailand. This is from The Guardian, actually,
well, there you
five
go.
Hours ago. So it's...
So they looked and they found a country that it was illegal in. See?
Yeah, exactly.
Wiped their collective brow and said, good, now we don't have to let this in.
We can avoid Bitcoin.
Thank you for tying our hands.
It does not hurt their mainstream customer base for them to wait. Like one is going to. My mom is not going to feel any pain whatsoever over
no,
this.
No, mom doesn't know. Of course.
This gets back into the whole Apple is worried about 90% of what will 90% of the people do 90% of the time, right. And Bitcoin is somewhere in the 1% of 1%.
Right. As somebody who is in the 1%, I like using my Android phone for that very reason.
Absolutely.
By the way, get ready, 700 million more customers by the end of the month. Apple has finally done a deal with China Mobile, the biggest carrier in China, to carry the iPhone.
Now they're going to have more cash that they have to figure out how to deal with.
Now what
is really
do?
A real problem for Apple? You know?
No, but they're doomed, Alex, because this was the last of the big low-hanging fruit. What are they going to do now?
That's true.
It's over.
By Disney.
Easy growth is over.
We have to open new worlds, new planets. Boldly go
Mars.
Where no...
Yes.
Martian Mobile.
it is seven... The subscriber base, just to put this in perspective, seven times bigger than the entire subscriber base of Verizon. you know, which is the U.S. largest carrier, 700 million people. Some research firms are saying Apple might sell as many as 1.5 million iPhones per month in China, 20 million activations in 2014. Could be more than that, though.
Yeah.
There's pent-up demand. China Mobile also has the most, apparently, I'm told, I don't know anything, the most affluent customer base, and that's, of course, the one Apple wants, right?
Yep.
So, good. We don't know what concessions Apple made, but the
Well, they've been talking up China for a long time.
Oh, they've wanted China Mobile forever.
Yeah, in the last 2 years, they said, oh, yes, look at all the Chinese support. And they've even put these things into keynotes where, you know, the local audience doesn't care at all about this. Right. But they wanted that message to go out loud and clear to China. So the various language supports they put into the thing, the various markets they're willing to open up, and I think some of the privacy stuff as well that the Chinese government cares about. I think they probably had several deals and say, yeah, we don't have to give you access to everything else in the world. We're willing to do X, Y, and Z for you.
Yeah, they're not willing to support Google Plus, but they will support Chinese-only social networks and stuff like that. So that's
Fable.
The Wall Street Journal's op-ed page, known for its independence and free thinking, has called Judge Denise Cote, the judge in charge of the Apple e-book case, Apple's star chamber, an abusive judge, and her prosecutor friend besiege the tech maker.
It's like an episode.
This could get really
legal.
Interesting, though. If you watch this case,
she has really been throwing the book, so to speak.
Well,
at
she's
Apple.
She's now stepped into it, so we'll see how this turns out.
Yeah, she wants a special prosecutor hired.
She has a special prosecutor hired who's an ass. But we all know that. But the most interesting part of this whole case is that she did a declarative ruling that said that she did not have any ex parte meetings with him.
Bromwich, the prosecutor.
Yeah. So she declared that, Apple said that we're afraid, she needs to declare whether she's already had these
some
meetings.
Some little side deal going on there.
And she declared that she doesn't. That's the beginning of a Watergate moment. So if it turns out, because I can tell you right now, if I was Apple, I'd be spending a lot of investigative time figuring that out, because basically, I would throw her under the bus in a second if I could prove it. And now the problem is that if she ever had those meetings, even if she declared against them, she's going to be worried about protecting that. So it definitely reduces her leverage dramatically as a judge. I mean, she's definitely gone way. I mean, it's fine to if Apple broke the rules, it's fine to have a ruling, but this is like this is a bulldog. I mean, this is just a pit bull. Yeah. She just applied
he
to it.
He has already asked for special private documents that are, according to the journal, beyond his scope. He's going, instead of to Apple's lawyers, he's going directly to members of the board asking for information.
He wants Johnny Ive delivered in front of him on a silver platter.
Bring me the head of Johnny Ive. And ironically, he has no experience in antitrust law.
So he had to hire somebody at almost the same amount to actually do the antitrust stuff that he was supposed to do.
Lord.
That's because he's, and that, of course, it's because he's her friend, right?
Yeah. All right.
So.
But it's funny that the Wall Street Journal, who previously in this year had a several anti-Apple pieces that were incredibly questionable, like Apple supply constraint, they won't be able to make these devices, that were edited mysteriously without any, proper disclosure, is now doing these incredibly pro-Apple pieces. And I have the same problem with
them. Understand, and maybe because you're in Canada, you're not aware of this, that the editorial, the journalist part of the Wall Street Journal is very separate from the op-ed pages. And the op-ed pages are extremely conservative and very political, and they're reporters are not supposed to be, and in fact, are not supposed to have any connection with the op-ed board.
Yeah, it's not even attributed, my understanding.
No, they never say a name. And so they do if it's a guest, but this is the, So I think that this happens all the time with a journal where you can't judge from the opinion page. That's a different thing than the press.
But there's a lot of articles about this. You don't have to look at the Wall Street Journal to see some of the articles that have been written about it. I mean, it's just
Fortune had a really good one.
Yeah, Fortune's a much better article, actually, that I think is linked from one of these.
Yeah,
Philip Elmer DeWitt linked to it.
See, I like Philip Elmer DeWitt. So if he says it's good, behind Apple's mutiny against its court-ordered e-books monitor, this is Roger Parloff writing for Fortune. Apple's taking aim not just at the court-ordered monitor in the e-books antitrust case, but also at the judge. Apple accused Michael Bromwich, a partner at the law firm of Goodwin Procter, of charging excessive fees, behaving in an unfettered and inappropriate manner, relying on secret communications with the court. That's the ex parte conversation. Mm-hmm. Evincing incredibly disruptive mission creep and acting in ways that threatens to turn him into a quasi-institutional offshoot of the federal judge who appointed him in violation of the constitutional principle of separation of powers. Wow. Now, remember, this is an adversarial, this is Apple's lawyers talking. this is the kind of thing you expect.
And he picked a fight, though. I mean, you know, the thing is, I think that they, you know, they didn't immediately go against the idea that they can do this. I mean, I think that they were looking at it as okay, sure, if you want to do that, we're not going to do anything down that path again. It's not a big deal. It's when he started asking for, you know, way
in
more than
e-book,
he was given.
E-book findings. Does he have to meet with Johnny Ive? Does he have to meet with every member of the board, including Al Gore? I mean, do any of these people really have anything material to contribute to the findings here? I don't know. I don't know. So
you are out of line.
It's absurd.
Or
the court
out of order.
You're out of order.
If the judge isn't careful, it'll cost her career. You know,
really, it's that big a deal. I mean, there are some drums.
If they prove that she made a declarative ruling that said that she hasn't been meeting with him, and she has in any way, shape, or form,
apparently
that's perjury.
His testimony contradicted hers because he said, "No, she told me to do this." What?
Just saying, there's obviously
Michael,
a lot of details.
I told him I didn't talk to you.
Right.
Come on.
There's a lot of details there, and it may be within range there, but it's a gotten herself into a lot of hot, you know.
Well, she's allowed them to make it about her, if nothing else.
What?
She's allowed them to make it about her, if nothing else.
And if I was Apple's legal, I would make it all about her, and I just drag her for the next couple of, you know, years, you know, through this process.
Amir Afradi writing for The Information, which is Jessica Lessen's new paywall tech journal, which I paid for immediately, writes about... Yeah, pardon me?
I bought a month of
I bought a year.
Of information.
I'm all in. Amir, who's very well connected, writing about free agents in Silicon Valley. Of course, number one is that guy, Scott Forstall. Wondering what Scott's up to. He's living in the Bay Area. Apparently advising... Well, he's traveled to Italy and South Africa, occasional appearances at the Silicon Valley networking events. He's advising companies and becoming more active in philanthropy. Perhaps a job at Kleiner Perkins, but Amir
he's
says...
He's got enough stock that he never has to work again.
He doesn't have to work, but Amir says, Apple Insider says, Scott likes to build products. So... He's probably looking for a startup to get involved in, I would guess.
I don't know if it would be a startup, though, because, you know, like, he doesn't strike me as a Berlin Serlet kind of guy who wants to do the ridiculously long involved hours. But maybe, you know, a company that he could turn around and reshape in his image and sort of do what he did with iOS would be really interesting.
He should get a job like working for like Gulfstream. He could do those the leather stitching on the seats.
That was Steve.
Oh, yeah, that was Steve. That's right.
See, that's the thing. Scott Forstall got this really bad reputation, especially towards the end of making iOS skew more. Scott Forstall was an implementation of Steve Jobs' will. His best talent was that he could figure out what Steve wanted and give it to him with like the least amount of work possible.
that's really
huge, because a lot of people would like send Steve stuff and they get an email back saying no. And, you know, it's hard to deal with, but Scott would have a basic idea what Steve wanted and help everybody get there. And that, you know, that's Steve's Gulfstream jet, and Steve picked all those textures, and Scott got us, you know, Carbon, and he got us the App Store, and he did a lot of really good stuff. And it's interesting to see where, you know, where that kind of drive, like without Steve Jobs, if you had a mentor disciple sort of relationship, how that disciple does next when he doesn't have that sort of thing to bounce off of anymore is really interesting to me.
And by the way, according to Pizza Box in the chat room, Steve Jobs went to Italy right after he was fired at Apple. So that's the place to go if you get fired.
So now
Italy.
He's going to start next.
Yeah. All right.
Next,
dope,
but one.
Dopey product of the week. Ryan Seacrest wanted a keyboard for his iPhone. He invested $1 million in one. It's a case. It snaps into your iPhone. It's called the Typo Keyboard. It'll be shown at the CES in a couple of weeks.
Can he just buy all the leftover BlackBerry Bolds and hollow them out?
It is really ugly. I can't imagine anybody besides Ryan wanting one. Am I wrong?
No. This is the sort of thing where you imagine the episode of Shark Tank where they get about 30 seconds of the demo and like all three of them are like, I'm out.
Yeah.
This is about the... I'm glad that such a product would exist for the 18 people before they die.
I want to read
a lot of people.
Let me read from the press release. Maybe this will help you understand why the need is. The backstory of Seacrest's interest in this: for many of his friends and colleagues, carrying two phones was a habit, one for typing and correspondence and an iPhone for virtually everything else. One night, Ryan and his friend Lawrence Hallier, CEO of Show Media, were out to dinner and both had phones on the table. Two people, four phones. So Ryan said, why do I need two phones when I could just glue a keyboard to my iPhone?
Well, there's a lot of, I mean, we have an office now in D.C. and we spend a lot of time in D.C. There's a lot of people with Blackberries, I mean, and that are very attached to it, right? You know. And,
But that's not because they like the keyboard. That's probably because
they're very attached to their keyboard.
Is really what made
they
the Blackberry.
They could just buy a BlackBerry Z10, but they don't.
They want the iPhone operating system, but they want the keyboard, because that keyboard that you saw there looks exactly like a BlackBerry keyboard.
Yeah, but look at it. I don't know.
This a tiny domed
keys and all. Yeah, yeah.
This There's doesn't seem like the sort of investment that he's going to get his money back on.
Mm. Yeah, it seems like he could hire like a 16-year-old to type for him for far less than $1 million.
I think he wouldn't even have to hire the 16-year-old.
Keyboard is probably the intellectual property of BlackBerry too, so we'll see what happens with that.
Oh, good point. Hey, one of the sites that you've got, Rene Ritchie's Crackberry, and I imagine, given the fact that you're in Canada, you read with interest the Business Week, the Bloomberg Business Week story, which I thought was really great, the rise and fall of BlackBerry in oral history, Felix Gillette, Diane Brady, and Carolyn Winter, and they talked to a lot of people. And it was kind of really great to read this, frankly. I really enjoyed it. And it reminded me of how much I loved the BlackBerry. I think I had a 350 before the iPhone, and I had a BlackBerry Curve before the iPhone.
My good friend and boss, Kevin Michaluk, is quoted extensively in there.
Oh, really? Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. I did see that.
Founder of crackberry.com.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I had a BlackBerry Storm.
Oh, no.
I hated it.
The Storm
it.
Was
oh, my
really
gosh.
Horrible.
It was the most horrible.
That was actually really horrible. Yeah. But this is a really great story, and it's a sad story because, it sounds like, first I thought, they just were killed, as companies often are, because in 2007, along came a much better thing called the iPhone, and I switched from my Crackberry to an iPhone along with millions of other people, and it was just inevitable.
I left my Trio.
But if you read it, it seems like there was also, on the part of BlackBerry, kind of, they ignored the writing on the wall. They didn't respond to it.
They made a lot of really bad, like there's this old Buddhist saying that the knife hurts twice, when you're stabbed and when you react to it. And like the iPhone came out and their reaction was they ignored it. They thought people were going to prefer data compression and keyboards to the iPhone. Then the iPad came out and they switched the playbook from being a companion, like a folio kind of device, to being a full on tablet. But they had no resources. They had to put the phones on hold for a year to make the tablet, and they didn't finish the tablet. Their phones got a year behind, just one thing after another. Verizon wanted the Storm. And then AT&T wanted a torch, and neither of them were successful. And over again, they made really, really bad choices. And that put them further and further behind, and it made a lot, more and more pressure to make more and more bad choices.
I this is a great article, which I highly recommend. I put it in my pocket. But they talked to one of the big sources, Gary Mousseau, who was the eighth employee at RIM. And Mousseau talks about an all-hands meeting where somebody asked about, what's going on with R&D? Let me see. I can't find it, but basically Mousseau says the attitude was, well, R&D is something you do when, you're not doing something real, and we aren't doing any R&D. And of course, this was 2007, when a little R&D might have helped. Little competitive research anyway. It's sad because I really, the BlackBerry pager I had, I loved it. I can't say the same for the Curve, but. The Curve with a non-working browser. It's like the browser just didn't work.
Right.
And you can't do that. You got to pay attention. Even a big company on top of the world, you start letting the little things slip.
It shows you how fast mobile can change.
Yeah.
We went from Nokia, like it was a Symbian, Windows Phone, and Windows Mobile, and BlackBerry, and Trio owning the world, to none of those being really functional companies or existing operating systems anymore.
Exactly. Hey, we're going to do our picks of the week in just a bit. You're watching Mac Break Weekly with Chris Breen, the hair of Breen. You don't do the hair of Breen on Twitter. You do the body of Breen on Twitter, right?
No, I'm the body of Breen. The hair of Breen is somebody else.
It has, one might expect, a life of its own.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm growing my hair long, and when I just showed the hairdresser a picture of you.
Yeah.
And I said, this is where I want to end up.
You know, you could try. I've seen, you know, Craig Federighi at Apple.
He's close.
He keeps trying. He keeps trying, but there's a lot of product in there. And you just can't do it through product. You have to be born to it.
It's got
to
be organic.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Macworld.com, the Mac 911. He's the Mac Daddy. Andy Iannocco from the Chicago Sun-Times. Renee Ritchie of iMore.com. And, of course, Alex Lindsay back from his... I'm just going to call you the peripatetic Alex Lindsay.
Peripatetic?
Is that all right?
Peripatetic?
Peripatetic. People have to look it up every time I introduce you. What? Peripatetic who?
Peripatetic.
But he has all his legs. No, I'm talking about you travel a lot.
I do. I travel a lot.
Okay. You, last time you were here, you said you were going to Hollywood for a big motion picture hangout. And then I saw the hangout, and I said, yeah, that was big. Wow. Was exciting. Is it allowed or no? No, let's not say.
Talk about it specifically.
But where are you going next?
I may leave this afternoon for India, so we'll see.
Wow.
So we'll. I'm not sure yet.
Where in
India?
So
either that or I'm here for the next week and a half.
Good.
Delhi.
We'd like to have you back. Delhi.
So either I either have to go get my visa or I'm going to hang out for another week and a half. So we'll see.
So what's this May thing? I mean, you're just on standby and you're just going to hang out at the airport, see if they have a seat, and then like...
We're trying to decide whether we solve it locally or whether I go handle it. It's
he's the
pretty
fixer?
High profile.
Nah.
So fixer. It's just...
Smart
Fiction, Mr. Wolf.
Pulp Fiction, he's Mr. Wolf.
Well, there's some skill sets within our company that there's like two or three of us that can do. There's 40.
I have some very particular skills.
There's a lot to do with hanging out. You know, so Liam Neeson was like, you know, like he was like torturing people, and I'm just like, hey, let's hang out. So let's, you know, so no, so no, it's just that when you deal with certain complex pieces, there's only a couple of us in the company that can do it. So we have to always decide who's going to go. We're still trying to
figure it out. Koi suggests some new adjectives. The wanderer, the nomadic wanderer. Alex Lindsay, the vagabond Alex Lindsay.
Yes, exactly.
The vagrant Alex Lindsay.
Exactly. Alex, if you were cast as a cast member on The Amazing Race, how would anybody know?
Exactly.
Sometimes it feels that way.
Exactly.
Yeah, sometimes it feels that way.
Our show today brought to you by the great folks at Shutterstock.com. When the time comes, and you will know, where you need a perfect image or video for your project, whether a website, a publication, an advertisement, a video, I want you to think about Shutterstock.com. Over 30 million. That's right. It's 31,704,882 royalty-free stock images. Over 1.5 million royalty-free stock videos. Check that footage tab at the top. I got to talk to them because I think sometimes people don't realize that the videos are there too. 1.4 million beautiful high-def videos. And these are royalty-free. You pay once and you can use them as you need in your PowerPoint presentation, in your video, frankly. I bet you could put a pretty decent film together with just stock footage. Wouldn't that be an interesting project?
That'd be a good challenge.
Yeah. Do a trailer. Many contributors to Shutterstock are professional photographers and artists. Of course, Shutterstock reviews all the images individually for content and quality before they add them. And there's always something new. Oh, look at that wolf. Shutterstock adds 20.
He dies, the young and the weak.
Yeah, I don't know if the wolf and in connection with the mother and child. That's interesting. I don't know where they're going with that one. Or what you would use that. Yeah. Which presentation. That's what. But... then the hungry apple eyed BlackBerry walking down the road. Shutterstock adds 20,000, actually more than 20,000 images every day. So there's always something new. Now, I also use it for inspiration, and you can do that absolutely free. Sometimes an image, looking at an image.
Well, actually, some of our fans use that wolf as inspiration.
Oh, let me see.
Yeah, they've actually made this, this small video for us. It's pretty epic.
This is from Shutterstock footage. This is the Herman Cain American Snow Dog. I don't get it, but I'm sure is that a viral thing going on?
It's a twit viral thing. That's an inside joke.
Who did that?
I forget which show it originated on, but this has been an NSFW. Yeah, the dog.
It's from NSFW.
NSFW, yeah. Of course. Yes, it is. Of course.
This is the beauty part. If you don't mind the Shutterstock watermark, you can use it all you want.
I think we just create a new standard where everyone just starts running ads with the Shutterstock
watermark.
Logo
what
on
the
it.
Hell?
Yeah, you know,
go ahead.
There's a new Pepsi ad with a Shutterstock logo on it.
The nice thing is you can throw this stuff in the light boxes and use it as inspiration. You have to create a free account, but you don't need to give them a credit card to do that. There's a great iPad app, which really is good. I mean, it just looks – I have it. It's just gorgeous.
And you know, one of the ways that I use a lot of stock, we've had to build a lot of presentations for people and videos. Is we'll go up to a stock agency and just throw in a whole bunch of images that have all the watermarks on them, and we cut them out and do everything we're going to do.
Spec it,
and then the client says, oh yeah, and a lot of times the client just says, yeah, we like everything that's there, and then we just go buy them, but we don't have to buy them until we're everything about
Lightbox will do
them.
That for you, yeah. So the Shutterstock app looks like something like 500px or something, like just some gorgeous photo app. Do you have that shot? There it is. So they always have new these are all basically light boxes. So featured light boxes. Here's a high contrast featured light box. So this is just it's just fun to play with this stuff. Yeah. You could share these with colleagues. You can use it for inspiration. I encourage you. Oh, hey, we were there. That's Santorini. That's that picture. I took that. They lead you to that on the tour of Santorini of Ia, and they say, "There's the dome that you always see when you see a picture of Greece." That's it. I've been there, done that. Anyway, I think you're going to love Shutterstock, the great search engine, the multilingual customer support. We are an international podcast. We're heard all over the world, and so is Shutterstock. More than a dozen countries, full-time customer support, multilingual support throughout the week. I want you to try it. Just set up a free account there. If you decide to buy. Before you buy, remember to use our offer code MacBreak1213 on checkout. MacBreak, it's December 2013, right? So MacBreak1213, all one word. And you'll get, this is a good deal, 25% off any package. I recommend the subscription package because that way we have a subscription for 25 images a day, and you're going to save a whole lot of money. 25% off, offer code MacBreak1213. I've been hiding... Let's go back to Andy. I like him. He's a smiling Andy Iannocco.
Now, if you don't have the Shutterstock watermark, you're going to have to pay for that picture.
Andy, why don't you start with your pick of the week?
I got a pick, but first...
you're going to take it apart for us?
There you go. Yeah, it's the simple... those of us who are old-timers remember how difficult it was to get inside like an original Mac Plus where you need the special weird tools and the
special technique.
You
weren't supposed to. Yeah, that's where I first experienced Torx.
This is how cool and how easy this one is. So there's the... really awesome, cool, just acrylic design. Yeah. And
yours
is not
cracked, it looks like.
Well, what? Almost never them were, because it was just like some...
No,
there
the line
some
was cracked.
Marks
no, that was
people
a big,
thought, okay.
That was a, you think well, they weren't that, cracks?
So, well, some of them were. I think a lot of people heard about the cracks, and then they saw like the mold seams in the corners.
No, mine...
Oh, my God, mine's cracked. No, mine's cracked.
I had cracks.
Help me, Apple, help me.
And I bought mine on the last day of availability. The day I got it home, they announced they canceled it.
And thus beginning an Apple retail tradition.
That's right.
Two sine waves out of phase with each other.
Yeah.
So you got this cool stuff, and then when you want to like upgrade memory, upgrade hard drive. Mm-hmm. Now, kids, there was a time when you could actually upgrade the memory and the hard drive or the storage inside a Macintosh computer. Try not to let that freak you out as you see what happens. So you turn it upside down, and you see this really cool spring-loaded handle, and then you go, cut it out.
You're right. Da-da-da. Nuclear reactor core. And there it is. Yeah.
Wow, that's awesome. I can feel myself going, Dave. Hello.
Isn't that beautiful?
I am an Apple G4Q.
Did Johnny Ive do that
built? I don't think so. I don't know.
He did. Maybe? He did. I have queued up the video of the Apple announcement. And
in
after
some ways it really is a precursor to the new Mac Pro.
Yeah. You get Johnny Ive speaking about ripping it right out.
Who is that guy? Looks really
familiar. I don't know. Huh? There you go. There's Johnny Ive.
Before I had white.
That it rises from the top of the cube, just like magic. You flip it over, there's this little latch that you hit, and it pops up, and you can pull the entire core out. Oh, it almost looks like this nuclear reactor core, something that you'd see in Mission Impossible.
The cloud.
It's easy access to all the RAM, to the airport cards, to the graphics cards. You don't have to then say, gee, I'm going to upgrade the memory. What expert am I going to have to find? It's something
this is
that
not. Was this a Steve Jobs production? Or?
Along with this amazing...
Oh, there he is. Phil Schiller.
Keyboard, yep. A professional new mouse. It's optical, so there's nothing to clog your jam. We reduced the speakers to an elemental form, the sphere. They're elegant, very simple.
Johnny Ive. So, and you kept yours. See, I'm sad. I gave mine to my nephew.
Yeah, it's like it was. It's you often have to wait a while before a computer design becomes so cool and classic mm-hmm. that you wish you hadn't given it away.
Know.
This one though was that's just too cool.
Yeah,
it was my working computer for maybe about a year because I didn't really need it. I just bought it because it was an opportunity. And then even then I'm like, oh no, just as a I buy so few nice things for my office. I will have the same sofa in my office that I had in my first apartment after college, but I will have this kick ass like functional computer sculpture. If I can't own an Apollo Disky computer, this is a close second in terms of coolness.
No kidding. So your pick.
My pick of the week is this simple, unassuming bag. Now, this is actually ties in with something we were talking about earlier today about iBeacons. This is from edec.com. This is their black hole Faraday bag. And it is a shielded...
I
got to
admit, that's a great name.
It takes your wireless device and basically puts it inside a black hole. So here is my phone. Here's the signal strength I'm getting right now. If you drop it inside the black hole, he said, there you go. Whoops. Boink. And suddenly, I hope...
Yeah.
It gets down to, I can't see it because it's shaded, but trust me, the signal is down to absolute zero.
Oh, that's so that kills the signal.
Exactly. It's completely shielded. To really do it, you actually fold it over once and then fold it over twice. And as a result, you get I'll try it a third time. There you go. Absolutely no signal to speak of whatsoever on any radio. And what I like, there are a bunch of bags. I wanted to experiment with this sort of stuff because I don't think it's going to be a must-have item. But I think that there might be times in your future when you decide, you know what, this is kind of a weird place. And I would much rather know that if I have my phone in my pocket, it can't be tracked throughout this mall or throughout this whatever. So it's a nice thing to have. This is the only one that I tried that really does work. I mean, that you can buy these cheap ones off of Amazon that are like maybe $7, $8, and they're nice and shiny and silvery, but they don't actually make your phone invisible to the network. This one does. It is so serious, as a matter of fact, that if you look in the back, there are a couple of pouches here. Those pouches are there for evidence tags because they sell these to law enforcement. And so the reason why this has this clear window here is so that you can actually continue to operate the phone even while it's cut off from the network. So the multi-touch is not going to work. You might be able to tap things through the screen. You can certainly operate any mechanical button. So if you are, again, in one of those places where I don't want to be tracked through this mall or whatever, you can still wake it up and get an address or an appointment time or whatever you need off of this. You can't, however, of course, listen. You can't. Don't try to be clever and sort of keep the headphones plugged in and basically snake it through this, because now you've basically given it an antenna so that the radio signals can get into it. But as I said, this might be an accessory that some people might be interested in. It is not cheap. It goes for about $60 on Amazon, but it actually works. And if you think that if you see an immediate future that is not paranoid, in which you might want to be able to say, no way, no how can any retailer track me through this. I'm not scared about the government. I'm scared about, you know, JCPenney saying, ooh, wow, he stopped in front of this place for 20 seconds. I'm going to try to sell him this. Maybe the only time you can get any peace whatsoever in life is if you have your phone in a Faraday bag in the future. And that's what I'm thinking about right now.
iPod Man in our chat room said they need to rebrand it the iBeacon Buster. Actually, there'd be a market for that, huh? You know, when I got my Fast Track, which is the RFID tag you put in your windows, you go through the toll, it pays the toll. They give you a Mylar bag with it, and they say, if you don't want us to see your tag, put it in the bag. So I wonder if just a plain old Mylar bag would be as effective.
Some of them work. The question is that it depends on how it's sealed. Believe it or not, air gaps are going to – there's a difference between it works most of the time and it works nearly all the time. Even this bag, I actually – tested it out a little bit and tried. I kept my phone inside here permanently for about like 2 days, trying to look for places where I could get any signal whatsoever. And to be honest, there were a couple of places where I could see the needle twitch a little bit, where I could see that there was something to connect to, but it couldn't connect to it. I don't know if that would be significant enough for data collection purposes, but it's good enough that it's if you either you want a solution to this or you don't want a solution to this. If you want a solution to this, get something that is designed so that the reason why it's an evidence tag is that this is so that if they collect a phone off of a suspect and they want to collect legally, I'm sure, collect data off of it without the person remote wiping the phone, this is how they do it. So it's the best one. I tried three or four. This is the best one that I saw, and I did include a couple of Mylar bags, which, to be honest, are about 50% effective. So it's not like it's ineffective.
And they're
a lot less expensive. But again, either you want assurance or you don't want assurance. If you want assurance, it's going to cost you $50 or $60.
Scooter X in our chat room says that Scott Eves just today announced the Blackout Pocket. exactly the same idea, a pocket that goes in one of your Scott jackets, and they have three levels of RFID protection. I would guess it's the same material. He says it uses a material called a proprietary material called RFID armor. So it's probably a very similar idea. And he has the same instructions. You fold the edge once and then fold it again and secure it on a strip. Who knows? Maybe he's even licensing it from these guys. I don't know.
Yeah. I was surprised. I thought it seemed to make no sense to me that we're trying to borrow radio waves. We're not trying to make it waterproof. But yes, if you actually do leave the top open, that's radio signals can bounce around inside there. Yeah. So okay.
Alex Lindsay, the Liam Neeson of Google Hangouts. That's what Effin Dunn says. You are the Liam.
I have a very particular set of skills. Skills I have acquired over a very long career.
I want to play that every time Alex is in studio from now on.
Alex now has a new digital business card.
Forget peripatetic.
There you go.
Liam Neeson-y. What do you got? Oh, Lord above. Don't tell me anything more. I don't even want to see it. This is going to cost me money.
We have a large collection of hardware from a company called Sound Devices.
Oh, yes, you do. And so do we, thanks to you.
Yes, exactly. And they released something new that I finally got to put into the field. And so last time, by the way, when I recommended the United app, it was because this had not went to my house instead of here. And I was going to show it because it was like brand new off the, and I was like, what am I going to recommend now?
Yeah.
So this is the 633. I have never seen so many tools packed into such a small little device.
So it's a little portable mixer.
This is a little that would be one way to call it, a portable mixer. Okay, so you've got it's a portable mixer that has, you can see John there working on it, one of the guys working on it there.
10-track recording.
So you can do, so basically 10-track is you have 6 tracks in, is he cutting it in half?
He's probably wants to show you what's inside.
That's what I call being serious about that.
Is he selling the belt?
So
it's a good demonstration of the belt saw.
You can have three mic inputs, but you can also have three line inputs. Then you can mix those to stereo, to auxiliary outs. You can then reroute all of those. So this is what's important to us, is not only can I record all of those tracks, so right. I can record my 6 tracks coming in, I can record 2 auxiliary tracks left and right, and all of those can be routed separately. So what's going out on the outputs, I can send, tracks 2 and 3 to output, the right, to 3 and 4 to the left, other ones to our auxiliary outs. And for us, being able to have all those, basically be able to do mix minus. So you're basically able to do multiple mix minuses out of a little field recorder, as well as record all those tracks, as well as have them fully limited, as well as being able to do audio delay, which is really important to us because when you're doing live audio, being able to get the sync right in the field becomes a big deal. Now, this is definitely not for everyone.
It's got a time code generator.
It's got time code generator. You can sync this, of course, with a bunch of other devices. You can have it takes AA, takes batteries in the back, and takes power. So there's a lot of different ways that you could lose power before. These things are the, you know, the M1 tanks of you know, and all of their, we have, as I said, we have 788s and 720, you know, and we have 302s and USB 3s.
So if you were like a Grateful Dead taper or something like that, this would be awesome.
They're not going to let you in with this thing. But the, and of course, it's got these really high quality limiters so that you're not, you know, peaking.
I have no need for this and I want it so bad.
Oh my gosh. It is amazing, and it records to SD or compact flash. You can, of course, hook it to your computer. There's just an enormous number of options that are possible here. So it is, and of course, it's, you know, you can record to SD or compact flash or to both at the same time, which means that you can, you know, have a backup immediately, and you can hand it off to your client. So you can be recording your own, and then you're recording it to an SD card, and then you can just hand one of them to your client, and you're done. And I think that the price is $3,200. So it costs as much as a computer. Here's the deal is that for the handful of you listening to this show that really need high quality field recording, every once in a while, I've been pretty good. I've been doing lots of inexpensive ones. My last couple have been free. I had to make up for it, you know?
Can I just play devil's advocate? Would your client be more pleased if you recorded it on an iPad mini and then gave them the iPad mini afterward?
It'd be cheaper.
You know, but the quality would not be nearly as high. The main thing is that if you're doing live, especially if you're doing a live event and you're recording the audio, which is what we were doing with it yesterday, it is being able to, I mean, this is really, I mean, and this is the standard. I mean, everybody's using sound devices in the field.
We went to see Dexter, you know, your buddy. That's what the guy was recording audio tracks for the TV show.
And it's pretty much everyone. Yeah. I mean, for film and TV, you know, this is kind of the standard. And so, and again, being able, for those of you doing live audio, being able to do mix minus with delay, you know, to sync up your audio is something that is very, very hard to find in a little package that small. So anyway, this has become my, we got one, but I think this one's not going to go much further than my house.
Just in time for the radio industry to die, the perfect field recorder.
We use it for, but this would be incredible for radio, but what it's really good for is if you're doing a video recording, you can have three people on mics. You can be bringing in other audio via line inputs. You can be, individually delaying all of the, you know, or delaying the outputs so that you can make that work. And so, it's an, incredible amount of power.
Anyway. And you can safely cut it in half.
There's like six people out there that just went, oh my gosh, my life has changed.
It's only five Alexes.
Dreamweaver.
Definitely like open the box before you leave the store to make sure you didn't get the one that they cut in half. And then put
just take it if it rattles.
You know, and for us, you know, what we were using before this was the 788, which is twice as much, which we have a bunch of too. So
this is half the cost of the 788.
Exactly.
Oh, well then. Exactly. Give me two.
Exactly.
So, but it only has three mic inputs. So you couldn't do like a round table show with it.
You couldn't do a round table unless you convert it. You have three line inputs. So if you had, if you used MM1s, you could do six people.
Right.
So if you had a couple,
why does it have 10 track recording if there's only,
it's six inputs plus left and right plus auxiliary one and two.
Oh.
So it's 10 tracks that you can record to. But if you had the little portable units that we use, the amp microphones, you could totally put six people in there.
There are people in the chat room who are saying that is an amazing bargain.
It is.
Those are the people who should buy this.
Yes.
If you say that's an amazing bargain, it's for you.
I always love the contrast between like someone like me and someone like Alex. Like I thought it was a big deal that I said, you know what, I do a lot of field recording now. I should spend $80 on like a portable recorder now, so I have that, and then, which is perfectly adequate for an idiot, but for if you want to actually be the Liam Neeson of mobile recording.
Well, the problem is if you're with the shows that we work on, if the audio is scratchy or peaked or doesn't work or we don't have recordings or whatever,
doesn't like bad audio.
It's a pretty,
let's put it that way.
You know, for us, the most expensive thing is failure.
your reputation is worth a lot more than $3,200.
Can I make that my motto too? the most expensive thing is failure.
Oh yeah.
Mr. Chris Breen, your pick of the week, sir.
It's that time of year when birds are moving around and they're moving from place to place. They're going from north to south and south to north. And I'm a bird watcher when I'm not hanging around looking into a bad camcorder. So what I do instead is I go outside with my binoculars and I identify birds. And this is an app that's been about, it's been out for quite some time, but I picked it up thinking, you know, I'm using this again because it's that time of year. And it's actually by Audubon. It's called Audubon Birds Pro. Oh,
I saw this at Macworld last year. This is beautiful.
Yeah, it's only $15. I mean, for people who spend 99 cents on apps and think that's too much, they may say, well, that's obscene. One of the nice things about this that it works for the eBird service. Oh, and what that is, it's a database service, basically, that is kind of a social networking thing. So that when you're in the field and you spot a bird that looks interesting or unusual to you, or you add it to your life list, you can send this up to eBird and that becomes immediately available to everybody else who wishes to see what's operating in that particular area. So right now, where I live, there's a couple of bald eagles that are nearby. And this is very rare for us. So if I want to see what's in the neighborhood that's rare and unusual, I just tap on check local birds. It will show me what people have spotted recently, but it will also show you rare bird findings. So it's a terrific application. You can put it on both your phone or you can put it on your iPad. It's one of my favorite bird apps. I like about three or four of them, but that's the one I use when I particularly want to spot something, mark it so other people can see it, and then look at other people's marks and then travel to see a rare bird.
That's neat. I didn't know you were a birder.
I'm a pretty bad birder. We have this hawk that's been out in the backyard for the last week, and I said, oh, it's a sharp-shinned hawk, and I took a picture of it and posted it and said, no, you idiot, it's a Cooper's hawk, because of course, you know,
everybody knows Cooper's hawk has a single white band around the neck instead of one and a half.
Exactly. Yeah. If you think the tech people are picky, wait till you talk to birders who go, now, you know, the leg on the sharp shin hawk. It's called the sharp shin hawk, you idiot, because the
sharp shin.
It's got a sharp shin, and apparently, you know, it's about the size of a pencil versus your little finger. And so, yeah, if you want to be humiliated, become a birder.
It's a cockatiel.
Right. It's a sparrow, you idiot. You idiot. Not an eagle.
Now you need the 633 to record the bird song and upload it your Audubon, your eBird catalog. Yeah. Wow. Birding has really gotten high tech.
It has in a way. You know what they really need, though, is something like that audio device that will be able to pick out the bird call that I want to hear and then identify it for me, because that technology apparently exists, but not in mobile apps. So developers out there, find a way to sample bird sounds and help me identify the bird.
Wouldn't that be cool?
I beacon you right to its nest.
We have a new, thanks to Effin Dunn, a new Photoshop meme. The most expensive thing is failure.
I find your lack of bitrate disappointing.
I want that. All right, get Renee Ritchie. We got a $3,000 recorder. We got a $15 birding app. We got a $60
bag.
RF invisible bag. What could possibly do to top that?
So I thought I had an expensive pick, and I was going to be all apologetic about it. But now, after Alex, I just don't care anymore. So this is about $100, and this is a MOGA. And what this does is it takes a game. Like, you know, we have these iOS games that have these virtual joysticks on them, and they work well enough. But a lot of people are used to Nintendo devices or Sony devices that have actual physical buttons, even an Xbox controller. So what the MOGA does is it comes in this little package, and it's about $100, and you open it out. And then it's got a lightning connector in it. It's got a battery pack in it. You can charge it. And you just place your iPhone inside. You close it back up again, and suddenly you have a full-on game controller. So instead of putting it on timeout like in one of Andy's bags, you can actually let your iPhone out for some fun. It's got two analog joysticks. It's got the D-pad on it. I'm back to forwards here. It's got buttons on it. Anything any gamer will be intimately familiar with. It works with any iOS 7 device. Something else that was announced at WWDC was this MFI program made for iPhone, where they have a standard for these controllers now. Logitech makes them. There's a variety of people who are making them. And this one, I got it at the Apple Store. It arrived there a couple days ago. You can get them from a lot of sources now. And it's just, if you are a tactile gamer, if you have always had a controller in your hand and you always want a controller in your hand, this will work with any modern iPhone, the current generation iPod Touch, and it just makes gaming a little bit I don't know, more traditional, more retro.
My issue with these was always that you had to have special games, but now that there's a standard, are a lot of games supporting something like this?
Yeah, you can go to their website, and they'll actually show you the latest games that are supporting the MFI program, and there's more. I'm using King of the Fighters, which isn't the most recent game, but more and more adding it. They do have to add support for it, like you have to add support for Bluetooth keyboard or any other protocol that comes out. But again, more, it's not, and it's not appropriate for every kind of game. Like, I wouldn't use this for letterpress.
no. I can lay those tiles down so fast.
Absolutely. But for games that are trying to adapt from being controller-based games and have the virtual controller, the tactile controller in many ways is still superior.
You have to have it for Call of Duty Strike Team. Absolutely. There's no choice. Yeah.
If you're going out, just if you're clearing somebody's skies, Leo, you want to do it with hardware buttons.
Hey, mine is a kind of cute little doohickey that turns your iPad into an iMac. Look at that. It looks just like an iMac.
It's like a little tiny iMac.
It's like a little baby iMac. And I fell in love like with that. These sight unseen. I went out and bought two, one for my iPad. This is the full-size one. And one for my iPad mini. This has some sort of nano-suction material on it. In fact, it's protected by a plastic shield. They say keep that so that if you're going to transport it or whatever, you keep that thing clean. This is removable, but once it's on there, it's really on there using micro-suction.
I want to see.
You want to see? Here, play with it. Isn't that cool? Now, you can't adjust the angle or anything like that. It's a cast aluminum. It really does look like an iMac. Yeah, it's on there good. But you can get it off.
You just rip it off?
Yeah. Just pull it off. Yeah. And it comes, and you know, you don't have to do anything special to put it back on. They do say keep it clean. You know, don't let Alex put his face on it. They also say be careful about washing it because you can remove it's not good for high temperature. But this is a really cool little device. It's called the Slope. It's from a company called Deke, D-E-K-K-E. And what I like about it, even though the angle's not adjustable, it's sturdy enough because it's got suction on the top and the bottom that you could, use it and kind of knock, bang on it. I mean, touch the keys and do all that stuff. You can see this guy's really using it. And so it can almost make a permanent kiosk-like installation for your
iPad. That's great. How much is it?
Well, it's a little pricey. That's kind of the negative. There are two sizes. There's the mini and the Slope 10. The one you're looking at is for the 10-inch. And by the way, it's not specifically for an iPad. $48 because they're having a holiday sale right now, normally $60. So actually, $48 is pretty good.
Do you think the adhesive would stand up to taking it on and off, like when you get into the office, when you leave the office, when you get into the office?
Yeah, I think so. It's one of them space-age adhesives, like
polymers.
Polymers. I don't know what it is. It's some. They say it's a nano. They call it nano suction. Nano foam.
They're giving those out for the elevation dock now, so you can finally take your iPhone out of them again without picking the whole dock up.
Ah, all right. My experience is I've removed it a few times. I'm not sure I'd want to do it every day. And of course, if you have a case, you can't. You have to take off the case. But it also doesn't have to be an iPad. Anything with a kind of non-porous surface on the back of it would work fine. It's a little big. The little one is too big. We tried it with the iPhone 5. It's a little too big for the iPhone 5. It overlaps. I mean, you could use it. It just overlaps. But it really is beautiful, I think, when you do it on a 10-inch iPad. I mean, it just really makes it look like a little mini baby iMac. So
cute.
$48 for right now on sale. Deke.net. Wow, what a fun show this was, gentlemen.
Given that there was
absolutely nothing to talk about, we found something. We generated some excitement. The Body of Breen can be seen at macworld.com and on Twitter at Body of Breen. And are you performing for the holidays anywhere in the Bay Area? We could all run out and see you.
You know, I haven't. I did a while ago, and there doesn't seem to be anything on the books. I am, of course, providing music for all my friends for holidays. And if you want to read my feelings about holiday music, you could go to chrisbreen.com, where I tell you exactly how much musicians hate holiday music.
It does seem I put on the Pandora or Songza, which is another good choice, holiday channels. And it does seem like a lot of very, very famous stars just really phone it in for their Christmas albums.
Well, it's, cha-ching.
I was listening to a Saul Soul Christmas song that basically had one note. It was like fa la 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 la, fa la la la. It was like, it's like 3 a.m. They'd recorded the album. They said, all right, guys, let's do one more for the holidays.
You're like, do we have to? We will pay you $1 million. Okay, fine.
No, think of it as an annuity.
It makes singing so much easier.
It's an annuity because when you make a Christmas song, it comes back every year. So I think that they do it. Because they know they're gonna, you know,
kind of like a seasonal recurrent on steroids.
Yeah.
Well, when you become an artist, it's a contractually mandated thing.
Is it?
Like duetting with Willie Nelson. You have to do it in your career. Otherwise, they throw you out of the union.
As long as I don't have to do it with that Tom Jones guy, because he grabs my ass every single time. Every single time.
Yeah.
Well, that's so nice to have you, Chris, and whatever you do, don't play any holiday music, okay? Leave that to the professionals.
I will, thank you.
The Mannheim Steamrollers of the world.
George Winston.
He's got the franchise. Andy Anatko, what will the holidays bring for you besides snow to the Boston area?
Peace on Earth, Goodwill Towards Men. Part one of my gift guide ran in the Sun Times yesterday. Part two runs tomorrow. And if you head over to anatko.com, I'm doing my annual musical advent calendar where more or less once a day I post about a stupidly long essay about a certain favorite, a different favorite song of mine. And not one of mine that I actually recorded, one that I've actually purchased for 99 cents or so.
Sounds good.
We started off this year with Sondheim Week, so there's a lot of really real pretentious, like, what people have to understand about company is that it's not anti-marriage, it's very pro-marriage. As we see, now people don't understand that Bobby wasn't actually at the party at all. Now, if you
Bobby,
understand,
yeah, so Bobby, give, Bobby, give that baby, to look Bobby, Bobby, Robbie,
somebody Robbie. Hold me too much. Somebody
Andy and I really kind of like musicals too much.
You can't love Sondheim too much. There's always Pacific Overtures that you haven't heard in 8 months, and now, okay, great, now it's Pacific Overtures week.
I agree. Sorry. Is this the? Can you turn up my audio? Is this the Sol Sol? It's not playing. Oh shoot. There's something I need to push, some button. Maybe Google Music knows I want to play it and violate every copyright law known to man. Oh, well.
You see? Google Music sometimes does that. It you can look. It's not making any progress down there.
Yeah.
Progress bar.
Oh, is that it? It thinks it's playing?
I think it's playing, but not.
It's in a blackout bag.
Yeah. It thinks it's playing.
iBeacon could see the maliciousness in your soul and intercepted it before you could actually enact.
Play. Oh, you know.
It's a Minority Report prescience joke to make here, and I'm not going to do it.
That's showing amazing restraint, Mr. Rene Ritchie, imore.com. We thank you for being here as well for the holidays.
Thank you, Leo.
And, of course, Mr. Alex Lindsay, who may be here next week or may be in Delhi. One never knows.
Or I may be back from Delhi by then.
Could actually be back.
Yeah. No, so I'll let you know. I'll send a postcard.
I know you can't confirm, but I don't think you'll be eliminated in the first week. just read the clue carefully and remember anything with a yellow and red flag on it is potentially a clue to the clue box. Don't just run past it.
Ah.
And by the way, you know, I really like your choice of artwork, Andy. It was Ferris Bueller.
Yes, the
The Smiths instrumental of
Please, Déjeuner sur l'herbe or something like that.
HBO had this great Sondheim documentary last night, and so I've been listening to George like all day since then.
That's
so
right, Sunday in the Park with George. I forgot. There was a Sondheim connection.
Every time I see that painting, all I think of is the instrumental version of the Smiths. Please, please, let me get what I want.
You know, the most expensive thing is failure.
It's failure.
Thank you all for being here. We do this show Tuesdays, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern time. We will be here for the next few weeks, yes. But we have a best of. I think it's really the last chance for you to impact the best of at twit.tv/best of. Because we're going to do that the week of Christmas, right?
Correct.
It'll be our Christmas Eve gift to you.
Correct.
That's December 24th, for those of you who have no idea what day Christmas is. Actually, listen. Okay, I suppose there are people like that, but I was in Target the other day, and they have, you know, the cards, and they had a big sign that says Christmas Day is December 25th. Like, don't forget, just in case.
Just remind you.
Orthodox Christmas, Leo.
Ah, that's the problem.
Metric Christmas.
That's metric.
Canadian Christmas. It's in October.
1900 UTC is when we do this show. If you want to join us anywhere in the world, we love having you. And I'm sorry to say, break time is over, so heck to work. Thanks, everybody.